The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, a very good morning to you. Welcome along this Monday morning. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, aren't you, with their New Year's resolution in your back pocket? Completely not broken over the course of the weekend. How are you getting on with yours?
Very well.
How
am I getting on with my New Year's resolutions? Not really. My New Year's resolution, I think, for everybody on, what is it, the 6th of January, is start going to bed earlier. It's happy bio-clock day to everybody who slept for 1 or 2 hours last night.
Yeah, and then I couldn't get to sleep at all last night.
Neither could I.
And I wasn't even watching the NFL. I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch highlights tonight. First day of work, back for a while. Tommy's like, what are you doing? I mean, I've been here the whole time. But anyway, that's a different story. I couldn't sleep.
For anybody who's waking up this morning disappointed that they stayed up all night watching the NFL, don't worry, you made the correct decision.
You did.
Because I went to bed before the second game kicked off, and I managed to actually see the full-time score before I went to sleep, before I eventually got to sleep. So that was hugely pointless activity, trying to put the head down before that point. But we will be on track eventually.
It was the excitement of coming in here to tell everybody about the glorious world of sport that we're looking forward to for the next decade, right?
That's
start of
it.
A new decade. It's a big thing.
It's the start of a new
it
decade.
It only happens 3 or 4 times in your life if you're unlucky and
you play your cards right.
7 times max.
And it feels fresh, it feels new, it feels like everybody has just wanted to hop on a brand shiny new green bandwagon of some description.
Yeah.
And Irish football has come along and delivered us this. It gave us the hope in 2019 that this new thing would bring us into a golden age. And then, lo and behold, the first weekend of football of the decade, this happens. Some great Irish performances, an Irish hat-trick in the greatest competition in the history of sport. The oldest, anyway.
Yeah,
We're back on track. The decade has started well.
Yeah, and we're all going to have to learn to pronounce Adam Ida, as opposed to Adam Ida, which is what we'd all have been pronouncing it until we went and looked up the BBC video.
Did our research this morning. We've also started on the right foot.
Yeah.
We can confirm Adam Ida himself says his name is Ida, not Ida.
Yeah, which is good that we all know that. Imagine how amazing we would feel about the future of Irish football if all that was happening was what was bubbling up in the underage. If there was none of the administrative stuff, right? And maybe the performance of the senior national team was a little bit better. You know, maybe if we qualified automatically. But we can just park the Mick McCarthy for a minute. New decade.
The Mick McCarthy thing is definitely going to end.
Well, and Stephen Kenny is very familiar with all these young fellas who are playing really well.
Mm.
I mean, they're not all playing really well, but most of them are playing very well.
And he knows them. He knows them very well.
And wants them to play.
And has been contributed and has been kind of mentioned in the development of a lot of these players. Like just reading up on a bit of Adam Ida this morning. So there was a guy involved in with Norwich, Robert Flanagan, who's their former Ireland-based talent scout. He's the guy who spotted Ida at the Kennedy Cup years ago when Norwich initially got their eye in and they thought that they wanted this guy. But he said that Stephen Kenny could basically tell him to work his bollocks off or feck off. The change in his work rate and hunger now matches his talent. He really works hard in every game I see as a result of Stephen Kenny basically treating him fairly harshly, I'd imagine, because the one thing that people said about Ida's game when he was young was that he just lacked a bit of work rate. He had all the natural ability in the world, but just lacked that bit of work rate. Like, this is the sort of one of the many anecdotes we start to hear about the man,
yeah,
and the work he's done with these young players.
Yeah, we've got to hope that the international team becomes the be-all and end-all for a lot of these players, because it's going to be harder and harder for them to make it to the Premier League. So if you're a championship player and Stephen Kenny is telling you, you know, you've got to shape up or you're not going to play, then you hope that that's going to have an impact in a way that maybe it was more difficult in the noughties for Brian Kerr to tell everybody, or for Chris Hughton at that stage, before he'd been a manager at in the Premier League. Maybe not. Maybe that wasn't what prevented that era from being a success. But you would definitely hope that connection that he has with these young players helps immediately to have an impact.
You would have thought so. Like, what I would always say is that there is a trend developing in football, and it has been for 15 to 20 years now at this point, and it isn't helping the international game whatsoever. They don't pay your wages. Norwich City will be funding Adam Ida's life for the foreseeable future, and it will be hard to wrestle influence away from the club in any position that you're in. That being said, there has been a sort of situation as well with Irish players over the past few years that successful international campaigns where, like, say, Euro 2016, for example, Jeff Hendrick would have benefited hugely from being involved in an international setup. It's not entirely a one-way street where, you know, your club comes first and your influence on the international team comes as a result of your club. It can work the other way as well. And if these young players realise that they've got a player or they've got a manager and a coach who's helped them successfully to actually get first-team starts, then their ear is probably going to continue to be open and listen to this guy.
Yeah, you'd hope so. We're going to speak with Keith Andrews a little bit later on about that. Going to look back across the weekend's GAA. You were at some of the games over the winter break. You saw your beloved Kerry get spanked, right?
Saw my beloved Kerry get spanked by Cork. They conceded like 6-18 to Cork in the McGrath Cup.
I mean, I know, you know, it doesn't matter, right? But at the same time, that'll get Cork just a little bit happy, won't it?
It was a big roar when Cork scored their opening goal. Like, Cork obviously are entering into a National League campaign where they're literally saving their status as a Tier 1 county because they have to get promoted.
Which, let's face it, is exactly what you want. If you're the Cork management team, suddenly every single training session has an impact early on in the year. Suddenly every decision that's being made is going to have an impact. There you go, there's your picture of the old firm.
Just to clarify, the Kerry team had flown on holidays like 2-3 days before that. So
the Kerry team went on holidays.
Yeah. So there was no senior players involved.
This is from a week ago.
But Kieran Sheehan was playing for Cork that day.
I couldn't believe it.
He was back in the
Kieran Sheehan was one of my favourite players. He was sensational. I saw he's back and I was like, is he back? And he is back.
He's back. He looked very, very good.
Did he? Ah, I'm so excited.
Like, granted, against an 18-year-old fullback.
Look, I'm going to take it. The little breadcrumbs. He was sensational.
Yeah.
Do you have proper memories of like how amazing he was? Now, maybe this is one of those with the passage of time, Andy Reid type situations, but like, I just remember being completely enthralled by his abilities.
Yeah, it's funny that you're saying that you're starting to sound like Mickey Hart in just a different accent this morning, blaming the AFL for all Cork's ills. Having the absence of Kieran Sheehan was a humongous thing, and then when you hear him coming back, it is this huge boost that they have himself and Ian Maguire on that occasion just looked men against boys for sure in those two occasions. And the corner forward that Cork have, I can't remember his first name, my apologies, but Gore is his surname. He looks like an absolutely unbelievable
Damien
Gore, sorry. But yeah, so Kieran Sheehan fits in nicely with the whole narrative that we've got over the last 12 to 24 hours.
He's only 29.
He's only 29?
Yeah.
So he's got even a year of allowing himself to bed back in before hitting top gear. But this Cork team, we're going to see something good for them in the early section of this calendar year, because they need to be good in the early section of the calendar year. They need to get promoted from Division 3 or else to be playing a Tier 2 championship, barring an upset against Kerry in the summer. But they'll certainly be happy with the way that trend has gone. Like, the other thing, and it's like barring the four games at the weekend, like the big story that we come into this Monday morning is Mickey Hart being the latest manager to slam the unnamed GA people who are working with the AFL, Ty Kennelly, I presume. And is there others? Is this Ty Kennelly the only one?
Is there not somebody here who runs the combine for them?
There probably is, in fairness. But Mickey Hart has come out and said that, you know, Colin McShane, he's going to try his best to persuade Colin McShane, or Colin McShane would be doing well to be aware of the lavish lifestyle that comes with being a footballer for Tyrone. He should definitely consider staying at home rather than going to Australia and following his dreams, and that these people who are former GAA men should not be involved in helping funnel Irish talent down under.
But they all went off and had amazing lives themselves, and they're like, oh, look, you can come aboard my this room in this Hollywood lounge for all of us, which is exactly what you'd hope people would do instead of pulling the ladder up behind them, right?
For sure, and it's something that we'll get into in the papers as well this morning. Like, over the course of the weekend, like, I'm not sure if you see this, but I know we're kind of doing a quick roundup of everything that happened at the weekend. But Ballyhale against Schlottneil, already up there as one of the sporting contests of the year so far. You hate to patronise any team, but when a team is 10-1 outsiders going into a two-horse race and they put in the sort of performance they put in yesterday, you can't help but kind of venture in that way of moral victories in defeat. Like, a lot of people have known about Brendan Rodgers as the Derry footballer, the great Derry footballer over the last decade or so, or maybe not even a decade at this point. I'll be embarrassed enough to put up my hands and say I haven't seen enough of him play hurling in the Schlottneil jersey over the last few years. But yesterday was one of those opportunities where you're just taken aback by him. That goal that he got late on was Rambo-esque. The problem is that Colin Fennelly was even more Rambo-esque in the way he managed to just dart through players, men hanging off him, and finish that goal late on to kill the contest. It was sublime, and it came down to the fact that Ballyhale have two of the best forwards in the country right now. At club level, that will win you everything. And it'll probably be too much for Boris Ali, despite the fact that they will have Their own superstar in their ranks.
Oh, Brendan Maher.
Yeah.
Brendan Maher's point with the shitty stick. Yeah.
My favourite part about that was, and I'm sure it wasn't deliberate, was that Brendan Maher actually goes shouting to everybody saying, give me a hurl, give me a hurl, so that we could all know at home that he did indeed do it with a broken hurl.
And now.
No, I'm going to joke. He obviously didn't.
Like, I was like, it was just 5 days too late to be included in 2019, which would have been like, can we just give out the 2019 Hurler of the Year award at the end of the year so we can include all of this? As well, it's like, I mean, obviously we had a very worthy winner of Hurler of the Year, but when you think back to what Brendan Maher's job was in the championship, nullifying so many of the opposition's best players, we still haven't found a role. Like, we're going to talk NFL a little bit later on, but the NFL have like loads of awards where there's Offensive Player of the Year, there's MVP, there's Defensive Player of the Year, like and they're all equal. Well, the MVP is obviously the most one because I think that's the one you get the truck for. But there should just be more Hurler of the Year award. There should be a Defensive Hurler of the Year and an Attacking Hurler of the Year.
It's almost as if you've come up with a great item for off the ball this December.
All right, we can do it retrospectively in January for last year, and
it's a good shout.
That would prove our case, and we can make the case for the whole year and try and affect some change. All right, going to start with the Irish news this morning because obviously the big news in the GAA world is Hart. GAA should cut all ties with AFL. Now, in fairness to Mickey Hart, this is not something new that he's been saying. He's been saying this about the international rules for a long, long time. I'd say as far back as Mickey Hart becoming prominent at senior inter-county level, he's been saying that the international rules wasn't a good idea because actually the AFL are coming over looking for our best players and taking them. But Hart, GAA should cut all ties with AFL. And then also they've got Kilcoo relishing All-Ireland final against Corrafin. So Kilcoo are through after their victory against Ballyboden at the weekend to play Corrafin. Corrafin, one of the greatest football teams at club level that we've ever seen. But Kilcoo, managed by Mickey Moran, who was the manager of Lochneil when they reached their All-Ireland final as well. And, you know, one of the GAA's great managers, it turns out.
Yeah, he certainly is. That's
going to be... What do you think about McShane?
I think if you're in Colin McShane's shoes and you want to go live a professional lifestyle, you go and do it. So Colin McShane looks at what he's achieved so far and he's put in the best year of his career to date in 2019. And still, you suspect that Tyrone are a good jump away from winning an All-Ireland medal. Now, maybe there are greater things that you have to strive for if you're an inter-county player, because only one county can win SAM in any given year. But perhaps Colin McShane is weighing up his options now and thinking to himself, I will not win an All-Ireland as long as this Dublin team exists, and as long as this Kerry team is getting better, who knows. But perhaps I look around myself in the dressing room and I can't actually see an All-Ireland medal in this dressing room. Or perhaps it's different to that. Perhaps he doesn't like his job. Perhaps he actually likes travelling and he actually wants to get paid for becoming a professional athlete. And he's now got the opportunity to do this. So fair play to him. Go and test it out. Go see what happens. Because like, there is nothing the GAA can really offer that will come close to being a professional athlete. I'm sure every GAA player loves playing sport, number one, and doing everything else, number two.
Didn't Kerry have that document that they were issuing to young lads who were being tempted?
Yeah, and like, fair juice to them for producing that, doing everything within the GAA's power to actually keep them, giving them potential college courses, career options that will allow you to stay not only in the country but in the county and not actually have to go too far away from home to actually provide yourself with a living. Now, I'm sure Mickey Hart is having those conversations, and I'm not sure that Tyrone have an official document. They can do everything, but the one thing they can't do is give you money to play football. The one thing the AFL can do is give you money to play football, and that is where this is what this boils down to.
Now, we know they can't officially do that, but that's not true, right? So we know of various hurlers and footballers in the past who have been professional for a year or two. David Brady said that he took a year off from work and ended up being a professional footballer for a year. One of the Clare hurlers at one stage took a year off and was essentially like it does happen. There are benefactors out there who will come in and somehow, and I'm not suggesting that Tyrone would ever do this, but like the notion that players aren't getting paid to play somewhere around the country isn't really that true, is it?
It isn't, but it's almost like the smoke and mirrors that goes along with that. That's your kind of
It feels dishonest.
There's a shame about it almost, and that's probably too strong a word.
No, you're right. Right. Actually, there is a shame about it, isn't there? There's like a sense that this can't happen. What do you tell people? You know, what are you doing at the moment? Oh, I'm playing a bit of ball. Are you looking after your career? What are you going to do when you're finished doing that? Like, there's no, oh, it's grand to have a pension because I'm being looked after properly. It's backdoor bullshit.
Totally. But there's also the kind of shiny example that the likes of Kennelly's have brought, where they're actually maintaining a sporting career in that professional game in Australia after their game. Like, it's not just kind of a one-stop shop where you play your career, you play your game, you come home with a broken body. There has been a couple of examples of huge success stories. Now, granted, it is weighed against you, but Colin McShane has turned out to be one of the best physical forwards the game has at the moment. So he's in a great place to make it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, let's wait and see, though. It'll be really amazing to see if he does actually make it. Let's hear what the interview that Mickey Hart did with the BBC. Have a listen to this.
All I can say is that he has been wooed by some people in the AFL, and I think he's gone out there for a few days to experience what that might be like. There's no final decision made yet of whether he's going to go or whether he stay with us, but at the moment he's certainly considering that move.
I'm sure you've been talking to him. Have you tried to persuade him to stay here, that his future should be with Tyrone?
Well, I wasn't actually, I suppose, not persuading wasn't the right word. I was trying to enlighten him to the fact that, you know, there's lots for him, lots of good things can happen for him staying here, and the things that he's going out there to try to do are very much more variable. As you would know, I'm not been a fan of the engagement we've had with the AFL over many, many years now, and I think that's the sad thing about it. It used to be in the past we had unknown Australians trying to woo our players out to their AFL league. Now we have ex-Gaelic players doing it, which really saddens me that that's what we've got now. We've got recruits for the AFL within our own ranks of the GAA, and that's sad.
Do you see that almost then like the enemy within?
Well, it's something that you knew was going to happen. All you need to do is get a few players out there first and get them sort of involved to some degree, and we find that most of them come home and haven't made it out there at all, and often don't even play as good a Gaelic football when they get back. But now they've got a different role. Now they can be agents for the AFL, and it's an absolute free gamble for them. If our players succeed out there, that's a cheap gamble. And if they don't, they send them back home to us to see if we continue to play football with them.
It's kind of characterising the players as having no agency in this, like having no brain power, no individual thought process, no desire to go and do something different, right? It's like these people within these ex-GAA players are having a free gamble at, it's unusual language to use about people giving an opportunity to somebody to better themselves. I guess it comes out to you don't see it as bettering yourself.
They're not brainwashing these young players. There should be some sort of base of what these players know and what they love about Gaelic football to stop them going if you feel so strongly about the GAA. And maybe that isn't strong enough in a lot of cases, and that's fine too. Like, you can draw a small parallel. I know Dick Clerkin's writing about it this morning in the Irish Independent. A small parallel between this and perhaps players leaving the intercounty fold and staying away from the game, the likes of your Oran McNeilishes. And it's not too dissimilar to this conversation as well, that perhaps there just isn't enough to lure you about the GAA, about being an intercounty footballer or a hurler at the moment, unless you're winning games and consistently challenging at the top table and have a high profile and you can kind of earn legitimately on the side or whatever the case may be, that it's not entirely different to the situation where these footballers are ripe for picking, as I'm sure Mickey Hart might agree with from the AFL, that if there's players dropping off of their own will from intercounty panels, then they are easy targets from the AFL. Now, that being said, the players have their own minds. These are grown adults.
And I think that's exactly right. You couldn't tempt people who didn't want to go if the situation here was perfect. The situation is clearly not perfect. Mm. People are leaving of their own free will. And it's all part of the same story. Like, one of the funniest comments underneath the Mickey Hart interview on Twitter, one of the funniest comments was, "Well, I'll let him go. At least he'll know when his games are." I was like, exactly. I mean, exactly. Exactly. All of this is all a fixtures problem, and the demands and the, like, when am I playing for my club? When am I playing for my county? Who's looking after my body? He goes and has a professional career doing something he really likes and, like, might be good at. He might be no good at it, but he'll come back at 25 if he's no good. You know, body broken, you know, all that. Will they break his body? Or will they actually look after him properly? Because they'll have the best medical, and the players' union are really strong, and, like, they'll actually make sure that he comes back, if he comes back physically well. Whether or not he wants to play football again would be another thing. I mean, that's a different issue. But that's up to the individual counties to make sure that they're providing a great environment and an opportunity to learn for the players.
Yeah, right? But it's also, at the very worst, it comes back a more interesting character. And if there isn't enough about the GAA right now to keep him at home, then I think that's a price worth paying.
It screws Tyrone in terms of their ability to beat Dublin, right?
Definitely, but like their ability to beat Dublin at the moment.
Is everybody not thinking the Dubs are there, you know? Cluxton's still not back officially. New manager in. How hungry are the team who've delivered history going to be, really? They're not going to be that hungry, right? Come on. Surely over Christmas you talked yourself into, this is our year.
What you mean when I was watching Cork 618, Kerry, whatever it was?
Yeah, the young lads are great. There's like two or three of those young lads who are going to file that away, let their small hatred of Cork flame up so that in the summertime they're punching lads.
Dublin players have spent all Christmas in Bally thinking to themselves, right, time to step out of Jim Gavin's shadow. Six in a row is on. We're going to do it without Jim. And
I think they've been lying in Bally having their belly tickled. That's what, I mean, they deserve it.
That's all part of the belly tickling process, believing that you can step out of your manager's shadow.
Is it?
I'm sure it is.
Right, we'll come back to that. The Irish Independent this morning, their back page. It's Tip versus Kilkenny all over again. So, Mara Heroics helped Barsalee to All-Ireland final date with Shefflin's all-conquering Ballyhale after Cats Kingpins survived Schlochneil scare. And so they've got loads of pages on that. They've also got a picture of Adam Ida up there. His hat-trick exploits give reason to believe in a 2020 vision for Ireland. Dan McDonald saying we should all be excited about the fact that there are loads of good players coming through. And then Clubs Kids prove there's still magic in the cup. This is Eamon Sweeney after after our Liverpool put their new signing straight in the team. Start the game.
Yeah, Minamino should have scored. Basically headed fresh air with a beautiful cross from the left flank and should have netted on his debut. Definitely would have been the winner. Instead, Curtis Jones steps up and bags an unbelievable winner. Nothing Jordan Pickford could do, just his flailing arm trying to get at something that was just perfectly into the top right corner. This is the same fellow that scored a winning penalty against Arsenal in the Carabao Cup in that crazy 5-all draw. So he's building a bit of pedigree. He's on BBC after the match and they're like, so how does it feel, blah, blah, blah. Not even a leading question. He's like, yeah, I've been really frustrated with my game time. Like a teenager comes on, scores in the FA Cup, playing with the best team in the world. Frustrated about his game time. He's clearly got bags of confidence. You kind of love to see the swagger in a couple of these Liverpool youngsters. And I don't really have a dog in the fight in the Merseyside derby, but there is a sense of black comedy about how the Everton first team got beaten by the Liverpool second team. Plus, you know, I guess James Joe Gomez, James Milner, perhaps Adam Lallana. They're full-grown adults, at least. It's not totally comparable to the Liverpool against Aston Villa game in the Carabao Cup. But it's still hilarious if you're a Liverpool fan, I'd imagine.
Most of my family viewing time at the weekend was spent watching Dancing on Ice. I'm not going to lie. Great excitement in our house about Dancing on Ice.
I did, I'm not going to lie, put it on for a little bit on Saturday evening. Just to
so see. Saturday was just the introduction. Sunday was the real thing.
Sunday was the real thing, but Kevin wasn't dancing.
Well, he was part of
the group.
So this is so you know Michael Barrymore's in it, right?
I do know this.
So Michael Barrymore broke his arm. Look, Tommy, relax. I'm getting there, right? Tommy's like, oh, well. Tommy also big on his Dancing on Ice gossip. So Barrymore broke his arm, right?
In training?
Yeah, in training, like 3 weeks ago. So they had to get a new guy in to replace him. So they got a new guy who skates in and who's like, his introduction to the whole group is he skates in and he's like, I can't stop. And they grab him and he stops, right? And so the group does their big thing last night. And Holly asks the judges, here, listen, you know, you've seen the whole group now for the first time together. Is there anybody who needs to brush up on stuff? And they're like, oh, yeah, the new guy. And Kev.
Oh.
Oh.
So he's already lagging behind.
He's unnoticed. Kev, like, nods his head and goes, thanks for that. Yeah. No, he smiled through it. He was like, you know, but I was thinking, you know, the Iceland debut, taken off at halftime by Mick McCarthy, you get it out of your system. That's over, and then you shoot forward to the next. Pressure's on.
I didn't know this was about to happen.
I thought he was good. I was like totally biased, thinking, yeah, no fuck ups there, buddy.
Well, you saw Saturday night, though. Like, in the montage, it shows Kev falling about. Like, there is no...
They're all falling.
But, like, Kev's sob story was just how much he's like, I've got hurt so much on a football pitch, but nothing compares to falling on the ice. And then he's, like, skating over with his partner to Philip and Holly, and he almost lamps himself into the centre as he's trying to get up off the ice. It was very entertaining for 5 minutes that I watched it, but it will be the full show from next week.
A couple of people fell last night, so you're like, come on, he's got to beat the people who are falling the first week. Just don't fall.
I didn't realise that Sam Matterface is like a commentating montage post.
Does each one, yeah.
Yeah, so it's there's more sporty elements to this thing than we initially thought, I guess.
Serious business. You would hope that just like the random football fans are going to vote for Kev as the representative of football, the way that like the GA basically win Dancing with the Stars every year.
It's true.
Is it Dancing with the Stars? I mean, is that what it's actually called?
He won at Edna Mahoney then... But I don't think he was the same year as Edna.
Oh, was he?
If my Dancing with the Stars Ireland knowledge is correct, I don't think Dennis Bastic went very far.
Was last night. I'm not watching it. Okay, he's going to win. Apparently, Tommy says.
Yeah, but you can't vote in Ireland for this.
No, it's fixed. The fix is in. The green vote. They put him in green. They put Moore in green. I was like, come on, ITV. You know, there are other colours in our palette.
Let's face it, he doesn't stand a chance against Moore.
Connor Joyce says, Colin McShane would probably play zero games out there, so that's clarity anyway. Grass isn't always greener on the other side. We in Ireland are very quick to stamp on the GAA and ourselves. Who's stamping on the GAA? Who, Connor? Tell us that, Connor. Who is stamping on the GAA and who is stamping on ourselves? Because nobody is. And the fact that he's going to play zero games out there, I hope he takes that and tattoos it somewhere inside his brain. So that when he does actually end up playing and scoring and having a career in the AFL, he can remind you, just very briefly, Richard Sherman, you know, the cornerback who used to play for the Seattle Seahawks, mm-hmm. very famous for, you caught me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree. Yeah, absolutely outspoken union leader. Did his own deal a couple of years ago when he signed for the San Francisco 49ers, which are in the same division as the Seattle Seahawks. Negotiated his own deal with no agent, and had a load of incentives built in. And at the time, the deal was absolutely crucified by the cognoscenti of American football going, oh, this is why you need a lawyer. All the lawyers were like, oh, this is why you need a lawyer. What a stupid deal this man's done. He's clearly very clever. He went to a big college, but look at how stupid his deal is. He made all of his incentives. So basically ended up earning about $4 million at the end of the season and took to Twitter in a 2-hour spree of just reminding everybody who went at him 2 years ago. He'd stored them all up. Mm. He kept receipts, he said. I hope Colin McShane is keeping receipts for all of the people who are like, oh, you're never going to make it anyway. Which is basically the tone of Dick Clerkin's piece. He's got a hard road ahead of him, you know, this stage.
Richard Sherman seems like an expert at tattooing stuff on the inside of his brain, which is something that McShane should get good at.
It's brilliant to have somebody like Richard Sherman on a team you support.
Yeah, well,
it's amazing.
I'm sure we'll get into it later on, but like this is your week now. This is where you start
trying to feel a bit,
telling everybody that, hey, everyone, this bandwagon left the station 2 years ago when Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G came on board, and I've been on board. I don't see you wearing your 49ers Christmas jumper this morning.
I know.
Get it on for the rest of the week.
Not Christmas. I might wear it on Friday.
Back page of the Mirror is my boy wonders, Klopp's pride at Curtis and the other cop kids who he insists are now ready for the first team. And Troy Deal near. Troy Parrott's long-term future at Tottenham looks set to be confirmed, with the club hopefully will put pen to paper on a fresh deal next month. So the Dubliner has attracted interest from Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, but with 18 months left in his deal, he's held talks and could sign a multi-year extension when he turns 18 on February the 4th. He obviously didn't play yesterday. Jose didn't use all his subs yesterday. Troy Parrott was on the bench yesterday and they needed a goal yesterday, but still, it seems that he is going to put pen to paper on a new deal.
The front of the Irish Times this morning is Munster and Connacht limp back into Europe. That's the headline of Gavin Coakley's piece. We'll talk with Alan Quinlan a little bit later on about the situation. The Heineken Champions Cup resumes this weekend. Clermont versus Ulster is Saturday at 1 o'clock. Connacht versus Toulouse, which is the game we have live here on Off the Ball on Saturday afternoon, is from the Sports Ground at 3:15. On Sunday, it's Leinster versus Lyon. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff in the RDS. And then Racing versus Munster at 4:15 is a huge game for Munster in the context of their overall season. And Klopp's kids serve Ancelotti with painful reality check. That's Malky Kirkwood's column. His Tennessee defeat looks like the end for Brady and hated Patriots. And rampant Leinster exposed golfing class 54-7 victory for Leinster. But it was a point a minute in the first half when it mattered.
Yeah, was it 19-0 after 19 minutes?
It's 40 at halftime.
That was a 40. Oh, God. That Ancelotti story, did you see the one yesterday or the day before about Ancelotti saying that he held talks with Liverpool post Brendan Rodgers? Like, imagine how different a place Anfield would be right now had they gone for Carlo Ancelotti rather than Jurgen Klopp. Like, Jonathan Norcroft in the Sunday Times yesterday actually did up a graph of, so on the x-axis you had quiet to passionate, and on the y-axis you had pragmatic to kind of experimental with how you actually promote your team. And at the top right you had Klopp, and at the bottom left you had Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah.
Like, complete polar opposites. And you just, like, that is a sliding doors idea that some Liverpool fans just possibly couldn't even tolerate at the moment. Because, like, we did have fears before Christmas that Everton had got Ancelotti at a bad time. And maybe there's just a situation with the history of his career that he will never be able to overachieve with a team, which is something that Klopp has done to a point. Granted, they've got good resources, but I don't think many Liverpool fans in their wildest dreams could have imagined what's happening so far. Back page of the Irish Daily Star is "Smells Like Teen Spirit" and "Loss of Kane, No Excuse," says Jose Mourinho.
The Racing Post, the winning machine, unbeaten envoy Allen on track for Cheltenham after Grade 1 victory at Nace. We'll talk about this with Tom Malone around about 8:35 this morning. And Osborne slams NAR's quiz for trivialising misconduct allegations. Jamie Osborne has criticised Britain's National Association of Racing Staff for publishing a spoof Christmas quiz to its members that highlights 12 serious allegations the organisation has dealt with in the past year. And then on the back, it's a taste of things to come. Promotion favourites test Premier League credentials at Arsenal. So Arsenal playing Leeds tonight, apparently for the first time in 8 years, 7 years, 8 years? 9 years. Thierry Henry scored the last time.
On his comeback in 2012.
There you go. 2012. Yeah, we heard that in the office. We're stealing these lines.
I do remember that. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I completely stole it from the office.
It was a glorious moment. The two comebacks that Arsenal tried to make happen this decade, last decade at this point, Henry and Sol Campbell. One worked out relatively well in Henry, and then Sol Campbell brought him back. I don't know. Anyway, the Daily Telegraph. Teenage sensation. Liverpool's 18-year-old wonder boy Jones seals Merseyside derby win with superb strike, and Mourinho avoids scare. Moura earns Spurs a second shot at Middlesbrough.
The back page of the London Times. Super Sibley gets England up for victory charge. England are up against New Zealand, I think, at the minute, are they? Don Sibley produced a breakthrough innings of 85, not out, to put England in the box seat at Newlands yesterday. The Warwickshire opener playing in his fourth test. Scored 79. It doesn't say who they're against. Oh, it's in Cape Town. Sorry, there you go. It's obviously against South Africa. Teenagers FA Cup stunner decides derby. That's the same one. So Curtis Jones had a sensational goal to settle yesterday's Merseyside derby. Was beyond the midfielder's wildest dreams.
The Guardian leads with that story. Jones jumps for joy. Bigger than a dream, says local hero after scoring derby winner. And who had Michael Oliver as the first referee to use the VAR screen? He was the one. He made history yesterday. Crystal Palace 0, Derby 1. History made as referee Oliver uses screen for VAR red. It's a wonder it's taken this long.
The Daily Mail, their back page is Corporal Jones. Did you get it? Corporal Jones. Is there a famous Corporal Jones? Am I missing the...
There is now.
Teen ace Curtis wins derby with stunning strike. That's the headline on Dominic King's piece. And they obviously also have a picture there. Boris organised a lift to Croker. Irish provinces Euro hopes hobbled by injuries. Injuries is also one of the themes that's come through over the course of the weekend. It's obviously a very busy football schedule, and James Milner went down just 10 minutes into the game against Everton. Jurgen Klopp very pissed off with both himself and the fact that the fixtures have come so thick and fast. And Munster also significantly damaged after the weekend. Niall Scannell, Finian Witcherly and Andrew Conway all forced off in the loss to Ulster on Friday, where they're absolutely hammered, 38-17. James Ryan was subbed off after 25 minutes. He suffered a calf injury, which obviously is important for scrummaging and general running round. And not to mention the situation in Connacht, where they are the walking wounded at the moment.
The back page of The Sun is Klopp kids a curt above. Teen hero hid illness to play. And final hurrah, Kilkenny will take on Tip for the first time in the All-Ireland Club Senior Hurling Championship Final. That's an interesting stat. This one as well, Iran strike cup fears. So fears over the 2022 World Cup in Qatar have grown after a weekend of tension between Iran and the USA. So Qatar is Iran's only major ally in the region, a stance which has put greater concerns, I'd imagine, around the World Cup, and the blockade between Saudi Arabia and Qatar which had kind of put a little bit of a cloud over the chances of this World Cup going ahead. A slight cloud, I should say. Those clouds aren't going anywhere, to put it mildly.
And we have the Irish Examiner for you. So, birthday present, Majestic Mar breaks Hurley, taking and converting free, makes a block in the clearance, gets a possession back, points with half a boss on the day he turned 31. Next up for Barsley, TJ Reid and Ballyhale. So, 5 pages of hurling action at the start of it. Club magic, the perfect antidote to wash away January blues. It feels like it's a good thing that these games are on January, no? Certainly when the weather's as good as this.
That's for sure, and it'll be even better when they get pushed back into December again and to get it all done in the one calendar year and let these players can actually go and enjoy Christmas after perhaps winning in All-Ireland.
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be perfect. And clearly, I think we've arrived at a point where the greatest chance of games getting called off will be in February and March. There are two worst months in this country, and you often have the trudging weather that they would have for the All-Ireland Club semi-finals in those months. So the more pushes back, the better. But there has been some concerns about whether or not they can get it all played in the one calendar year. Those many concerns tend to be overcome pretty easily when you've got a final date set in stone, because quite often these things develop and get out of hand when there isn't something set in stone.
But some breaking news confirmed overnight by the AFL. Adelaide Crows have confirmed that Irish all-star Cathal McShane is set to train with them for 2 weeks in January. Athletic Irish prospect Cathal McShane is set to train with Adelaide's AFL squad in January. Crows general manager, list management and strategy, what a title, Justin Reid confirmed the club will fly the 24-year-old to Australia in the coming weeks. We're looking forward to Cathal joining our pre-season training programme and getting to know him a bit better, he said. He has the physical attributes, coming in at a touch over 190 centimetres. He's also strong in the air and can kick on both feet. Once he lands in Adelaide, it'll provide the opportunity to understand more about our club, our philosophies and what our programme looks like. The Crows already have a Gaelic convert at Westlake's. AFLW rookie Ailish Considine won a premiership medal in her debut season with Adelaide's women's team in 2019. So there had been an assumption that he was going to be going to the Brisbane Lions because there was another former Tyrone minor there, but it turns out he's headed to Adelaide for this trial anyway. So it's no deal has been done, but there will be a 2 week training session in January for Cathal McShane. And it's the worst thing that happened out of all this is that he gets a holiday for 2 weeks and 2 weeks of living like a professional in Australia, you know. How bad is that?
Like, how bad is that is right. And maybe Mickey Hart will be saying, well, I need everybody in here for pre-season and everybody needs to be around and all that. But good luck to him. Let him go. Let him go spread his wings. Let him find out for himself.
I boobed. Conor McKenna is at Essendon, not Brisbane. It's James Madden who's at Brisbane, the Brisbane Lions. Right, 8.08 this morning here. You're watching OTBM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Plenty coming up this hour. We're going to have racing, the GAA Club Finals and rugby with Alan Quinlan before 9 o'clock. Up next, it's football with Keith Andrews. If you want to get involved this morning, you can tweet using the hashtag OTBM or just leave a comment on whatever stream you're watching. We'll be back after this. OTBAM.
I was saying there, he looks ready for it physically, and he's 19 next month, so he's obviously like just getting a little bit older, 19 years of age. But to score, I mean, Preston are playing at a decent level in the championship, and he's frightening pace. Yeah. You would think if you're the coach of Norwich, you're probably thinking this is a player that we could definitely use come off the bench with 10 minutes to go. Because but I was saying to Dan when he played in Toulon and I'd watched him and I said I don't really rate Adam Ida. He's not holding up the ball. He's not the outlet that Ireland need, albeit against very good players. And Dan was saying, well, he's 18 years of age. You're obviously writing him off far too early. So anyway, kept watching him for the next 4 or 5
games. You're wrong, basically.
I couldn't have been more wrong. Watched him against Sweden, watched him against in the Italy game. And as Stephen Kenny pointed out during the week, when he was playing against Italy, he was playing against a player who'd actually played in Serie A for Inter Milan against Juventus, came off the bench for half an hour, I think, the week before, and played very well. But his performance against Sweden at home was absolutely outstanding. And again, you know, as much as we're talking about off the pitch, I think we've so many reasons. 4 Premier League players, including Ida, teenagers, strikers this year from Ireland. That's probably never happened before. And
yeah, it's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Hugely exciting.
I mean, come on. Boop, boop. The hype train is leaving. Let's go. Let's get on board.
There seems to be kind of like a bit of a tussle to the front of the queue. Which Irish youngster should we be most excited about? The mantle seems to have gone from Troy Parrott to Aaron Connolly now.
Oh, Obafemi started first, right?
He was the one. Obafemi, of course, yeah. Before all three of them. And you'd kind of forget that they're all in the same age bracket. And then Obafemi gets a Premier League goal recently, and he was kind of front of the hype train. But as long as we've got, as long as we've got four of them, we should win a World Cup.
Exactly. I mean, no lower expectations than that.
4-2-4.
None of this third, fourth place playoff bollocks.
Absolutely. Screw that. 4-2-4 is going to be our new formation under Stephen Kenny. There's a great piece on The Athletic by Michael Bailey, who does a lot of their Norwich work. In the wake of his hat-trick on Saturday, because if he's a bit of an unknown quantity to a lot of Irish people, he's certainly not of a huge unknown quantity to a lot of people in the UK, I'd imagine. So lunch with Delia, working with Pookie, getting rid of Lazy Streak, how Norwich wooed and improved hat-trick hero Ida. And I mentioned Robert Flanagan near the top of the show. So he's Norwich's former Ireland-based talent scout. So he'd been watching Ida for a long time. And he was watching the opening game for Cork's representative team in the 2015 Kennedy Cup Summer Youth Tournament, which, when you see that down in writing and a website like The Athletic, you kind of think to yourself, if Adam Ida goes on to have this hugely successful career, what it does for the prestige of tournaments around Ireland, and namely the Kennedy Cup, the most prestigious one. Like, he says that, like, you can see the word lazy in the headline. He kind of laughs about that, Flanagan. He says that he put down that he was lazy, he lacked movement, but there was something there. And he said it was one of those instinct things that Ida played when the ball was around him. He didn't work hard, but he didn't necessarily need to work hard. He was just this kid who stuck out because he was outrageously talented, had everything skills-wise. He had it from the physique, but he just needed to put in a bit more of the work rate. It's interesting as well when you think about, like, the different clubs that were in for him. Like, Newcastle were in for him at the time. But apparently there was just a general thought around Ida was that Newcastle were a bit of a basket case, somewhere quiet for him to actually learn and develop, that had a bit of a better reputation, lying in the Championship perhaps a bit longer than Newcastle, or than Norwich, wouldn't have done him any harm either. Like, always a top destination for a kid like Ida to go to Norwich rather than Newcastle, because you don't know where the first team opportunities are going to come from because of a good bit of turbulence at the club. You saw on the headline there as well, lunch with Delia. So this was to do with his mother, Fiona. So she made a trip across to Norwich with Adam from her council house home, they say, in The Athletic, in the Cork City suburb of Douglas, to have a look around. The club soon found out she was a big fan of Delia Smith, with Norwich's joint majority shareholders happening to be at Colney, the training ground, at the same time as Ida's mum. Norwich made sure the two parties met, had lunch, shared a photo, and left Ida's family convinced they should join the club. So that's what did it. Lunch with Delia Smith.
Let's be having you. So I don't know if everybody's seen the hat-trick yet. If you haven't, go and have a look at it. The first one is just a beautiful burst of pace with a sleek right foot shot a minute into the game. Now, there's a miscommunication. The defender is like, as Adam Ida is scoring the goal, the defender is like waving at the goalkeeper to come out to it. So like, it's a little bit late. You're trying to rearrange that. But it's, you know, it's just a burst to get past the defender. And it's calm right foot finish a minute into a game in the FA Cup. The second one, the keeper kicks the ball out. Again, a bit of a keeper error, but he's about 40 yards out, and it's a beautiful left foot shot this time that he just curled into the empty net. So you're like, okay, this guy has composure. And the third one is a penalty. You're like, okay, granted, it's a penalty. But actually, it's a penalty he wins himself, where he's dribbling around the keeper and the keeper takes him down. So the keeper didn't have a great game, and you know, but this doesn't look like your stereotypical Irish teenager. He's like, he's got pace, he's got power, he's big. This is the way of the future, and I, for one, welcome our new overlord, Adam Ida.
I 100% agree. The most impressive thing, not the most impressive thing, but one of the most impressive things about the second goal was the way the goalkeeper just lashes the ball at Ida.
Yeah.
Like, for him to have that presence of mind to control the ball really quickly and then lash it into the back of the net was really impressive. Just one last line from this article now. I don't want to ever have to get into a situation where we're comparing these players. I want to enjoy them all at the same time. But I couldn't help thinking that way when there is another quote from Flanagan here, the other scout from Norwich. He says, I think seeing Aaron Connolly and Troy Parrott making waves and getting into first teams, it was the realisation for Adam that he's better than some of these players and his time would come. Now, he's not saying for sure that he's better than them, but perhaps he wasn't putting in the work rate that they had mentioned earlier on, and he'd seen the likes of Connolly and Parrott come through.
Who's saying this?
This is Robert Flanagan, Norwich's former Ireland-based scout. The guy who spotted him at the Kennedy Cup.
Right, that's why the Irish comparison comes in. Yeah. It's pretty exciting, isn't it?
It's hugely exciting. Like, it's hard to think of a time, certainly in the last 20 years, when you have four attacking prospects all come along in the space of 18 months, as has been the case here. And
we're basically back to Duff, and that group coming through, and then Robbie Keane's team coming through immediately afterwards.
That's about late 90s, so it's over 20 years at this point. Just to hammer home the fact that the late 90s is indeed over 20 years ago. So this is, for me, the most exciting one. And I will accept that it is more exciting because they're attacking players and they're getting headlines because they're scoring goals in the FA Cup. Whereas perhaps lower down the rung, you have a performance from Darragh O'Shea at West Brom at the weekend, who we'll get into with Keith Andrews as well at the moment. And you just see this quote from Slaven Bilic, who's obviously West Brom manager at the moment, about Darragh O'Shea. "I love Darragh O'Shea. We all love him, but forget about how nice he is as a kid. I love Darragh as a football player. In the summer, we lost three players in that central back position. So Craig Dawson, Mason Holgate, and Adari Biayo, Tosin is his first name, plus Sagazi had surgery. We only brought in one. The club wanted to bring in more. The only reason we didn't was Darragh." So you're seeing these things come through, and like we're used to an element of this down through the years of seeing a manager taking kind of a fondness of a certain Irish player. We don't often have four goal scorers coming through a top.
And it would be one player every three or four years. and that would be it. Right, Keith Andrews is with us. Keith, happy new year to you. Good morning to you.
Morning, James. How are we?
Yeah, good. No better man than you to talk to, who obviously very familiar with these lads coming through at underage level. Let's talk about Adam first. Were you in any way surprised by the breakthrough that he had at the weekend, or have you kind of seen this coming for a while?
Yeah, I've known Adam for a good few years. Obviously, being involved in the underage setups, he would have been one that would have played up a year. His size, obviously, physical presence always helped with that. But every single step he's taken in his career, whether it be under-17s when he was in under-16s or in the 21s last year, or having only been 18 years of age when he makes his debut, he's taken the steps with relative ease, I would say. But he's had to be patient this year, in particular at Norwich, because he could have got plenty of loan moves, but they wanted to keep him close to the first team. And in the last week or so, getting his Premier League debut, and obviously well and truly on everyone's radar after his hat-trick in the FA Cup against a proper team in Preston going away. He's well and truly on everyone's radar now. He's done very, very well.
The manager afterwards said he's not going to go on loan. Apparently Doncaster were in and they were close to a deal being done. In some ways, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing somebody like that go out on loan and just play football for the next 4 or 5 months for the rest of the season. Because at Norwich, like, it's a Premier League team. His minutes will automatically be fewer than they would be if he was to go out on loan.
Yeah, Jerry, I think the issue you have with these young players is that it's brilliant that they do well and the respective club managers think highly of them. But you can ironically be too close to a first team, and that is actually detrimental to your development because you don't get enough minutes. And even when you're that close and you're on the bench, you don't even play 23s football at times. So your general fitness isn't quite up to speed. So, yeah, you're right. Look, I think the Doncaster ones, I would imagine, dead and buried now. I spoke to Doncaster assistant manager last week and he was of the assumption that it was kind of done and dusted, but I'd be very surprised if that happens now after his exploits at the weekend against Preston.
Yeah, because, like, is he ready to play 15 minutes at the end of a Premier League match?
Well, after getting a hat-trick against a good championship team at the weekend, you'd have to say yes. You know, he's playing understudy to Teemu Pukki, who's got a bit of a knock at the moment. All along this season, he's kind of been third choice striker of the first team. He's trained with the first team all season. They only play with one striker. It's the way they play, and Pukki's obviously their number one striker. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the coming weeks. But you can only imagine what he's feeling at the moment. The confidence will be through the roof. The confidence that other players will have in him now. They'll have seen it in training. Daniel Farke said earlier in the season, the game against Crawley in the League Cup, not quite hit the heights, but he's certainly done that on Saturday against Preston.
It's been mentioned in a couple of the articles, Keith, about how Adam obviously was earmarked from a very young age as having a great physique and just a great technical player. But his work rate was something that had to be worked on. Is that something that you'd agree with that you've seen over the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, I feel like I've built up a decent relationship with Adam because I've worked with him for a few years, and I think there's an element of trust there. So I can be very frank and honest with with Adam about his game, and there's certain aspects, like every single young player, that you have to work on. The goal-scoring instinct, I think, has always been there, and it's probably unusual for a player of that size to have that. You normally think of a fox-in-the-box type predatory striker, and he's not that because of his physique, but he's got a very good clinical edge to his game. But general parts of his game, general hold-up play, types of runs that he makes, how to affect the opposition out of possession, all these types of aspects of the game are areas that he needs to work on. But I think as long as he's focused, as long as he keeps that focus, those areas will come. He has the area where, you know, a lot of strikers crave for, and that's in front of goal, the different types of finishes that he can produce. He has that in the locker already.
He's 6'3", so he's a big lad.
Yeah, he's a unit, yeah. He's an absolute unit, and when he uses that to his benefit, and when he really gets into that mode of I'm on it today, and I'm going to show the opposition centre half that I'm in business. And you only need to look at a few of the games that we've played with the 21 against top opposition. We played Brazil in the Toulon tournament, and they had two centre halves that are worth gazillions. Gave them a really tough time against Italy and Salah. You've got players that are playing for Inter Milan, Bastoni, centre half, and he made him look very, very ordinary. And they're all aspects out of possession and running in behind and threatening in behind and showing that pace and utilising that pace and power. Because when you have those attributes and you don't use them, then they're obviously not going to be very, very effective. So I think it's just bringing all parts of his game together. I think he's at a football club that work hard at that in terms of trying to develop him as an individual within that team structure, obviously.
Yeah, we were chatting there before you came on air just about how long it's been since we had four players at that age group who are breaking through at the same time, who are all attacking players. So there's himself, there's Conley, there's Parrott, and there's Obafemi at the moment. It's unbelievably exciting. It must be exciting for you guys to be involved with at that level as well, to see the different rates of progression that they're all going through at the moment.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? Like, we've had a good year in terms of them playing, them scoring goals, them producing some brilliant performances, all of them. But then there's big chunks, isn't there, in between international camps, and international teams can only do so much for individual players. You give them a little bit of a platform, even when at club level, maybe it's not going as well, or they've had an injury, or they've had a dip in form. I think it's nice, because I've had it as a player, and I know how much I cherished it when you came back into the international fold and you had that belief in you. You can go again, but between November and March, it's a huge chunk of time, and then it's very much down to what they do at club level. But it's also an exciting time because we've seen it, but they have got first team action. So we need them to develop that first team action, and whether that's going to be at their respective clubs or potentially in January going and getting a loan move to further develop and kick on again to the next level. It's just exciting overall, as long as they keep developing in the way that we think they can.
Were you surprised that Troy Parrott didn't get on yesterday, Keith? And there was some suggestion that when Jose came in, the loose kind of notion that perhaps he doesn't give young players a chance, and then you see him getting the Premier League match ball a couple of weeks back, and there's talks of a new contract then this morning. It's kind of hard to know exactly where he lies, but perhaps it just comes with the youth and inexperience at this point to not be thrown in when Spurs needed a goal yesterday.
Yeah, look, it's one of those where they obviously feel the right path for Troy is using him at the right time. A little bit like Adam, having him around the training set up every single day to get used to that type of intensity of training. And you have to remember how young Troy Ann in particular is. And it may well be that, you know, he's using that way where he gets a few minutes here and there, or if they see fit at a certain stage, he can play a few games. But then maybe next season that they have earmarked for him to go on loan. And again, I'm just thinking out loud, but is it disappointing from our perspective? Yes, I suppose to a degree. But also, we have to be patient with them because they are very young at the same time.
Darragh O'Shea was a name that kind of went under the radar at the weekend. I think everybody would go under the radar when you've got an Irish youngster scoring a hat-trick. But he's had an interesting time so far at West Brom. I just didn't realise how much Slaven Bilic loves him. He's a huge Darragh O'Shea fan.
Yeah, I spoke to Slaven Bilic first game of the season. I covered the first game. It was at Nottingham Forest, and I spoke to him that day. And he said that day how much he rated Darryl O'Shea, and I think he was speaking about before I came on about the reason why they did bring in another centre-half. And this goes back to what I was saying about being so close to a first team. And I've been in that position myself in my early 20s where we were playing 4-4-2. We had really good central midfielders, Paul Ince, Alex Ray, Colin Cameron. I was always part of it, but I didn't develop in the space of a year, 18 months. And I actually declined as a player because I just wasn't playing enough minutes at first team level. Now, Darryl O'Shea is so close to that first team, and he's so highly thought of by Slaven Bilic and the football club. It's a delicate one for him because they're in such a good position in the league. You can understand the predicament that Slaven Bilic is in, that if anything happens to Hegazi or Ajoy at centre half, he'll go straight in. He's shown that. He's proved that he will do that. But he's one of the most improved players that we have over the last year, 18 months, after his loan spell at Exeter, where he was outstanding, and it got him used to playing competitive football, and I think it got him into a mindset of away from 18s, 23s football that this is the way I need to train, this is the way I need to prepare to be a proper professional. So I've got a lot of admiration for Derek.
Yeah, the future is feeling pretty bright at the moment with that crop of players coming through. Before I let you go here, Keith, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about Arsenal playing Leeds tonight in the FA Cup as well. Bielsa obviously is saying that his main thrust of the entire season is to get that team promoted, and so this isn't that big a game for him, but that he wants these games to be part of Leeds' future. What do you think is going to happen tonight, and what do you make of how Leeds are going at the moment?
Yeah, Leeds are doing well. They haven't played brilliantly over the last month, I would suggest. But when that happened last year, unless they were dominating games and taking chances, it cost them. That's what ended up costing. They ran out of a little bit of steam. The issue this time around is they've just lost two very, very talented players. Eddie Nketiah has gone back to Arsenal. There's a little bit of frustration, I think, from Leeds fans that he has gone back because they are a little bit light in that department now, only having a Patrick Bamford, really. And Jack Clark, who they sold the Spurs, got long back. He was an outstanding player for them at times last year. He had a bit of an illness and an injury. So they need to fill those voids. Look, they've built up a nice little lead themselves in West Brom at the top of the table. And I think they'll see it off this year. I think they'll have enough as long as they maybe replace those two players. And those players that have been with Bielsa now for the space of 18 months or so, they still play a very, very high-energy, high-pressing game, and it's brilliant to watch. And it's going to be interesting to see how many changes they make tonight for the game against us, because we've seen the amount of changes over the weekend. It's quite sad in a way, but equally, I can't particularly blame club managers with the hectic schedule over Christmas because it's been relentless.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Keith, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Cheers, lads. Take care.
It's Keith Andrews. Happy New Year to you. And giving us some thoughts on that. 8:30 this morning here on OTB AM. It's hard not to get too carried away. People giving us grief for that. Conor Joyce. Are we actually comparing these young players who are good to Damien Duff and Robbie Keane? Yes, it's great to see young Irish goal scorers. But seriously, calm down and wait until they have a consistent run in their teams before hailing them as Ireland saviours.
We're talking about excitement rather than actual talent.
Nobody compared them to Duff and Robbie Keane. Steady on, Conor. We said that there has been no time since Duff and Keane that we've had as many players coming through who were attacking players. You've got to go back to the underage Brian Kerr era. Was the last time that we had players who were this interesting coming through as attackers.
Yeah, congratulations to the FAI. Thank you for producing these four players.
Look, there's obviously loads of people doing great work at
fairness,
coaching level.
That is true.
And all the regional development officers and all those people who are, unheralded. And look, maybe all those plans that Rude Doctor have had have finally come to fruition. Will the IRFU step in and provide temporary relief cover for Connacht's 19-player injury crisis like it did for Munster and Ulster in the recent past, asks Dara O'Toole. That's pretty interesting. Ms. Star on YouTube says, the poor LGA can't deal with a bit of competition. But it can. The thing is, it totally can. This is just one manager giving out about it. Like, loads of counties have lost players. Mayo, Kildare, Kerry have lost Stephen O'Cumber and a couple of others.
Yeah. Well, there's talks currently about the goalkeeper, Devidas Iosis, but he played for Kerry yesterday in Tipton and McGrath Cup. But of course, Cork have lost Adam Ida to soccer. Dublin have lost Darragh O'Shea to soccer.
Was he a good Gaelic footballer?
Good Gaelic footballer as well. There's actually, on Darragh O'Shea, I know we've got to move on, there's another piece about Darragh O'Shea in The Athletic today as well. And Alan Caffrey, who spent time with him as head coach at St. Kevin's, says he was excellent at GAA, Dublin the most successful county, and always there to offer him to change codes, but he wanted to be a professional footballer, and then talks about how you've got to be brave in Gaelic football and all that, speaking to a UK market. But we know that. We know that GAA made him.
Yeah, of course. Curtis Jones, obviously the best story of the weekend, says Sam Lowther, who I think is just a Liverpool fan. Right, sports news and racing next with Tom Malone. First though, Down Club Kilcoo made it through to the AIB Senior Club Football All-Ireland Final after beating Dublin Giants Ballyboden St. Enda's. After the game, Aisling O'Reilly caught up with their star forward, Jerome Johnson.
Probably take a wee bit of time to sink in, I'll probably be home. But I'd say my dad's waiting on me to say a few things to me about some of them shots that I took today.
Jeez, I heard you there. You were like, why didn't I go near post? I'm like, you're in the All-Ireland final, do you really care?
It'll not be probably forgiven in our house until it's all over. Just the way it is, that'll be the whole focus of the next 2 weeks. What were you doing? Mm-hmm. So, but look, back to work Monday or Tuesday night, and you know, Cora Finn are going for 3 in a row.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a mighty, mighty task.
But I'm sure you would have thought like that coming out here today against Ballyboden. You know, they've been there before. They won it in 2016. They had that experience. So, you know, you didn't have the fear out there today. It didn't look like it anyway.
No, look, we know of a good squad of players there. If you've seen some of our training games, to go right to the wire sometimes, actually, well, the so-called second team, should I say, actually beat the A team. So there is a lot of strength and depth in the squad, and it only leads us to a better place.
And what about playing in front with your brother? What's that like?
Two of them.
two today.
Yeah.
Was that a first for a while for the three years to be starting?
We both played the Ulster final again, but it was probably touch and go to see whether Shane would play or not, because he hasn't done much there this last 5 weeks. But him and the youngest in the house, he actually led the way towards the end up front. So.
I know, yeah, brilliant. He got the last point, wasn't it?
Yeah. So look, all those things are positive, and as I said, leaves for a bit of stick in the house now. On the receiving end of it tonight, so.
Yeah. And so what'll happen now for the next about 2 weeks you have, isn't it, until the final?
Well, I think Monday everyone will be back to work, so that'll be the first thing. And then, look, it'll just be back to business. Mickey probably takes down to earth, say Tuesday night could be tough, and then that'll settle everything down again and go again.
Yeah, so an All-Ireland final for them to look forward to, obviously against a brilliant team like Cora Finn. You would give them a good chance, but Cora Finn will be raging hot favourites for that one.
You would have thought so. Basing it purely on what we've seen over the last couple of years, you might have thought that Nemo would have been Cora Finn's biggest test. But that's hugely unfair on Kilcoo, given the performance they put in at the weekend. Now, Cora Finn just come with so much pedigree that Kilcoo could possibly win any other All-Ireland prior to the last two or three years, and this Cora Finn team have just gone to another level. They can stamp themselves as the best club team of all time with 3 in a row, and no other team has done it. So there's a huge incentive there for Cora Finn.
Yeah, let's hear from Cora Finn now. Here's the Cora Finn goalkeeper, Bernard Power, speaking with Mara Tross and Nicchielli after they beat Nemo on Saturday as well. Have a look.
Bernie Power, that was a game where you didn't have to work too hard, but when you did, you really had to work.
Yeah, I personally think we did have to work hard. We knew getting the first goal at the start was a massive plus for us, because our aim going into that game was to concede no goals. And thankfully we did that, but definitely Nemo putting it up to us. And going in this, at half-time, we knew it was going to be a game in the second half, and it definitely was. I don't know if the scoreline was as tight as how they played us.
I hope you don't mind me saying this as a Galwegian. We often watch you and we're like, it's great fun watching you, but it can kind of give us heart attacks too. Even right there at the end, but you somehow managed to get the little shoulder off. You flung the Nemo attacker 3 feet away from you. You got a massive cheer.
Yeah, that's the end of the game. Now all the bodies out the park are tired. I'm standing the goals for most of the game, so it's not too bad when you're fresh running out of the tired legs. So.
Yeah, because when you'd be watching from goals at times, I'm sure it must be quite frustrating. You're seeing things happening, but also everything kind of starts and ends with you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it starts with the kickouts, I suppose, and ends with the shot stopping. But all the boys out the middle of the park and the field and everything, top class from today now. And hopefully we can push on for 2 weeks' time, because there's still a lot of work to be done.
I was just going to say, yeah, there's no big break this year.
No. Hopefully now we can push on, because we still have a bit of work and a bit of stuff to work on, whoever wins the next game. So looking forward to watching that now.
Is that better or worse without the break?
It's hard to tell. I'll tell you after the next game, really. So.
Well, that's it. We still don't know yet who's going to be in that next game with you. But watching here at Curfin, the performance was amazing. It was William watching you play. He's like a little orchestra. Everything went fine until in front of the post. Not your post, you'd be glad to hear. But I'm sure that's something you guys will be working on. What happened there, do you think?
Yeah, we just have to sharpen up on our shooting, really. It's great that you're getting the opportunities. Once you get the opportunities, they'll come on the right day, hopefully. And the pitch out there is absolutely perfect. It's great playing on a pitch like that this time of the year.
All right, let's move on. It's 8:37 a.m. this morning. You're listening to OTB AM. Tom Malone is here. Tom, good morning to you.
Happy New Year.
How's
it going?
Very well.
Good. Good weekend. Good weekend for horse racing fans as well.
Yeah, would you want to start there? We talk about that first?
Yeah, we'll start with that because first grade one of the calendar in Ireland yesterday where Envoy LN took the Lotus and Ace grade one, obviously hurdle. Over 2.5 miles, it makes him 7 out of 7 now. Last year's Cheltenham Champion Bumper winner. He'll have a, looking forward to Cheltenham, he won it very well. He'll have, 3-4 entries at Cheltenham Festival. He's around about 11 to 8, I think, for the Ballymore Novices, which is the 2.5 mile novice hurdle. It's the most likely race for him, but...
Why would they go for something different?
The temptation would be to go up against the big boys and have a cut at the Champion Hurdle.
Right.
And there will be a call for him to do that because this year's Champion Hurdle looks a substandard renewal. So, Envoy LN, there will be a lot of public talk about him going to the Champion Hurdle.
Not for novices.
No, it's for the elite. But
is there more prize money?
Yes, there's a lot more prize money as well.
So.
But, Sheely Park paid €400,000 for this horse.
So they're not
particularly concerned about that. But this guy is a chaser in the making. Ultimately, his career goal, you would imagine, would be to win a Gold Cup one day.
How do you know he's a chaser in the making? What is the...
Physically, on his page, everything about him, he's a gorgeous big stamp of a horse. But a lot of these chasers, when they jump, the smaller obstacles look awkward or they can be a little bit slow over them. What sets him apart is that he's just really quick over his obstacles and he seems to have genuine pace. So he's a really exciting prospect. Also the day before as well, Fiddler on the Roof for Colin Tizard won the Tolworth, which is the first grade one in the UK. And ideally, these two horses would clash at Cheltenham. That would be the ideal team. They look...
In the novices
hurdle. In that novices hurdle to set up a proper clash. So that would be an ideal situation.
And there's no chance of them meeting beforehand. They'll be kept apart.
No. I'd imagine both horses will nearly go straight to Cheltenham at this rate.
Okay, right. So what are we, the January?
You'd imagine the two of them would. But two very exciting horses.
Who's your money on?
I would be with Envoy LN, but Fiddler on the Roof looks good. Again, similar kind of profiles as well. They're obviously both sort of chases in the making. But that's just kind of the trend now for the horses that are sort of making money as sort of 3-year-olds of the sales, and they're going on to become pointers. They're stoutly bred. They're ultimately for that game. They're ultimately, they're exciting as novice hurdlers, but most of them then, rather than going on to open hurdle classes, will skip that and just go into being novice chasers. So you look at it again, the last 2 years, novice chasers have looked excellent, and that's just a product of the way horses have been bought now.
Because we're always sitting here at Cheltenham Week and kind of looking at people like yourself or any other racing pundit, say, and you're kind of glorifying the fact that you all got on anti-post betting. Is Envoy LN going to be one of those horses?
11 to 8.
He said 11 to 8.
He is going to be the... He will
it's
be.
Too late.
The, he, no, he, on last year.
He's a plunge be, horse. He will be the Irish banker, the one that like...
He's got 6-4 on kind of thing.
He could easily, yeah. Once it'll come to...
Too rich for my blood on
Monday. It'll come to Monday morning and Sunday evening, and we'll be like, Tuesday declarations ready for Cheltenham. Envoy LN is not clear for the Champion Hurdle. Steam into him for the Ballymore, and that's all you need to know.
Right, what else is going on today?
We'll start with Gaelic Games. Tipperary champions Parsley ended a 33-year wait to make it back to the AIB All-Ireland Club Senior Hurling Final yesterday. Brendan Maher inspired side were 7-point winners over St. Thomas of Galway in the semi-final in Limerick. They now take on the might of defending champions Ballyhale Shamrocks of Kilkenny in the final in 2 weeks' time. And Parsley manager Johnny Kelly says his side are well used to being underdogs.
Yeah, obviously we will be, and on the basis that Ballyhale Shamrocks are All-Ireland champions, and the players that they have and the youth that they've brought through over the last couple of years has energised Ballyhale, and we are very aware of that. If we don't set up properly, or if we don't bring our intensity levels up in 2 weeks' time, then Ballyhale will hurt us, and hurt us badly. So if we do, it gives us a chance.
Quick word in the Walsh Cup as well, because Dublin remained in the hunt for the Walsh Cup semi-final spot after beating Carlow yesterday by 320 to 18 points. Matty Kenny's side will play their rescheduled clash with Laois on Thursday evening, and a win will put them through to the last four of that pre-season competition. In football, it was a wonder goal from Curtis Jones, which meant Liverpool, who started three teenagers yesterday, saw off Everton in the Merseyside derby in the FA Cup third round. David Moyes earned his second win in charge in his second stint at West Ham yesterday when they got the better of Gillingham by 2-0 to make tonight's fourth round draw. Chelsea comfortably beat Nottingham Forest by 2-0 at home, while Spurs will need a replay against Middlesbrough after yesterday's 1-1 draw at the Riverside. There's one game tonight. It's a repeat of the 1972 final as Arsenal welcome championship leaders Leeds to the Emirates.
It sounded familiar.
Well, 1-0 to Leeds that day. I was looking through this as well. Thierry Henry is the most unbelievable record against Leeds. I think he scored 12 goals against them. When when he came back, he got one against him in the FA Cup. And
that
everything.
Was hilarious.
12 goals. One day he got four. Just absolute piggery against them. But Mikel Arteta aiming to make it back-to-back wins as Arsenal manager. And he says he's a big admirer of his rival head coach, Marcelo Bielsa.
You talk to players that they had him as a coach. What the words that they have towards him, they are always positive. They were better players afterwards, better people. They understood the profession better.
Our kickoff at the Emirates Stadium tonight at 7:56. Of course, they have that mental health initiative there, delaying all those kickoff times by an hour. In American football last night, the Minnesota Vikings stunned the New Orleans Saints in the NFL wildcard rounds last night. A Vikings quarterback, Kirk Cousins, excelled in the 26-20 overtime victory. Sees them through to play the fancied San Francisco 49ers next. The Seattle Seahawks also progressed last night. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles 17-9 to set up a day with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers next weekend. And we'll close with golf, where Justin Thomas won the Century Tournament of Champions in Hawaii last night in a playoff. The 26-year-old saw off the challenge of fellow countrymen Patrick Reed and Xander Schauffele in a three-man third playoff hole. It was the first three-man playoff since the winner's only PGA Tour event moved to Kapalua in 1999. Graham McDowell, by the way, finished back in a tie for 23rd on one under par after final round 72.
How much did you get for that, winning that?
I'm sure it's not insignificant. Anyway.
Patrick Reed obviously taking to heart all the criticism he had over the last month or so. It's really damaging his golf game. It's like, yeah, come on, bring it on. It's like he's kind of feeds off the energy.
There's only what 34 of them. They're sent to Hawaii.
I know, it's just early January when the rest of the world is like, oh, it's pretty miserable. It's like, I'm going to go off and have a good time, and win $1 million.
Yeah, minimum.
Right. 8:45 here this morning on OTBM. It is Monday, January the 6th. Nullag na mBan. Yesterday, in Off the Ball from 1 to 7pm, we had a full day of female voices on the radio and launched a brand new show, Keane and McGean Unleashed, as swimmer Ellen Keane and runner Ciara McGean were joined by Irish legend Sonia Sullivan and boxer Kelly Harrington. You can listen back to it via podcast or watch the show on YouTube or tune into OTB Sports Radio at 3 o'clock today. Have a quick listen.
The amount of success you've had since 2016 has been phenomenal. And just how did you get into boxing? Could you tell us that?
Basically, when I was younger, I was going down the wrong pathway. I suppose there's two pathways you can go down. One is the right one and one is the wrong one. And I was heading down the wrong one at a very early age. And I suppose I was very mature, academically not very smart, but streetwise very smart. So I knew what I was doing was wrong, and I knew I needed to have to change something. So I knew sports was good, and I suppose boxing is very well known in the inner city. Mm. There's a boxing club on every second corner nearly. So that was how I ended up getting into boxing, and the discipline in boxing is the best discipline that you could have, really, and the coaches, they let you away with nothing.
When you were first starting off and you were joining the boxing club, did you ever have dreams of the Olympic Games?
To be honest with you, no, I've never had a dream of the Olympic Games, because I started boxing basically to take me on a different journey in my life. And as long as I was on a different journey, that was my goal, was to take me away off that wrong path and onto the right path. And it's not only until 2016 when I actually started to believe in myself that I could actually do something with my career, with boxing, that I started to believe in myself.
Yeah, so that's great stuff from Ellen Keane and Ciara McGean speaking with Kelly Harrington. You can hear that today at 3 o'clock. It is obviously Nullag na mBan today. You can listen back to our whole series of podcasts on the OTB Podcast Network. Alan Quinlan's here. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, Ger.
It's pretty good for the Leinster fans, but the Munster fans must be feeling a little bit, things need to change pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it's obviously, and the game at the weekend was very, very disappointing to say the least. I was pretty optimistic on Friday, thinking that they could go and put in a good performance and run Ulster close. Ulster only had three changes in their side, and probably have the luxury, the way the fixtures fell. They sent a second string, stroke third string academy down to Leinster, the RDS in the first, the one before Christmas, and then they did two home games where they walloped Connacht and beat Munster really well in that last game on Friday. So they probably, the fixtures felt good from that, and obviously they had only Henderson and Stockdale out of their group, so they've had a bit of consistency in selection, but that doesn't take away from their performance. I think they've played a lot of really, really good rugby. Dan McFarlane's done a brilliant job with them. The pace to their game, the accuracy has really, really improved, and they're a team that we've all probably had a cut off in the last couple of seasons, but they're doing very, very well.
Yeah, they're doing great, and they're good to watch. And part of it is that they have a nine who they trust to be a game maker and to run things through.
Yeah, and obviously he's played very well for him. He's a really good footballer. There's a real spring and energy in his step. He's quick. He's but it's probably, and it's a strange thing to say, because Ulster's set piece hasn't been great. Their line out and their scrum has creaked a bit,
that makes it all the more impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But I think where he's profiting from is their carries are very, very dominant, and their efficiency around the breakdown has improved tenfold, I think. One of the things that we spoke about Ulster for a lot in the last couple of years was lack of ball carriers. They now have a number of carriers who are getting over the gain line. The ball is quick. Cooney bounces in and out of the breakdown, and his delivery is very good. So on the flip side of that, Conor Murray is kind of struggling because it's a dogfight a lot of the time to get the ball back. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that he looks a little bit unsettled. He looks a little bit unhappy in himself. I'm not saying he is and that there's something going on, but I just think he's probably a little bit frustrated. And sometimes when you're chasing kind of really good performances...
And isn't that the thing? Like, some players have World Cup hangovers that are different from everybody else's, and like, you just have to accept that in a way. That, like, yeah. I'm not saying you accept a lower standard of play from what we're used to, but like, different players respond to different things different ways.
What no one should accept from Munster anyways is your pack going to Belfast and being bullied around the field. And I think it's very hard for Conor Murray to play well behind that. And I think a lot of the games, you know, they're getting parity, maybe some games they're probably losing the battle and still doing okay in other games. But there's no dominance there from his pack in front of him, and it's very difficult for him to play well then and get his confidence, because it's a bit of a battle all the time. So when you're kind of struggling a little bit with form, you kind of rely on, as a scrum half, on the front, the guys in front of you to deliver good ball so that you can try and make a few line breaks, that you can kind of run with the ball. He hasn't really had any opportunities to make a line break. His defensive cover, his work rate is very, very, very good still, but I just think it's that bit of zip and getting the ball away and making some breaks.
The harsh question that Andy Farrell will be asking himself is, if you put John Cooney into Conor Murray's shoes on Friday night, would he have done a better job than Conor Murray did?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. Probably, because I think he's probably full of confidence at the moment. He believes he can do anything. He's kicking goals, he's in touchline clearances, he's making line breaks. I think he's anticipation, and when somebody makes a break, that was kind of an upfield run that he made for that try where they got a little bit of space in the outside. So it's like a striker in soccer on, I think, when you're sometimes you don't have to do a lot and you just make a little break and the ball falls to your feet and stuff. And that's happening at the moment. And Conor Murray's had that year in 2018 where, you know, lots of things stick for him, and it's just not happening at the moment. So he's got to stick in there. He's a very, very strong character, and I played with him towards the end of my career, and we always looked in awe at this young guy coming through because he was an incredible athlete. And he's just suffered a little bit. I think he's taken a lot of there's been a lot of kind of disappointing results in the last 12 months with Munster and with Ireland. So
do you just play through that? Do you take some time off? Do you give him?
It's up to Andy Farrell now. I think that if you're going to pick on form, you know, it's probably John Cooney deserves a shot. You know, you can, as a coach, you can go and pick someone who's, you can pick Connor and he could be brilliant against Scotland and Wales and start. But that's the kind of risk that we spoke about that Joe took with a lot of the Irish players heading to the World Cup. So I think we need to change that mentality a little bit now and throw a little bit of caution to the wind. And I think you can put Conor Murray on the bench and bring him off and that could reinvigorate him or re-energise him, if you like. But that's not to say that he won't start. Conor Murray could easily start and be really good for Ireland. But I think if you're going to reward form, I think John Cooney is the one that deserves a shot at it.
Johan van Graan wasn't a happy man after the game on Friday. No. It's probably a combination of things. Obviously, the performance they put in Belfast, but also, I guess, the load management from the IRFU. Munster have been hit relatively hard by that, harder than, say, a team like Ulster would have been over the festive period. It's not really something he can have too many concerns with because he knew what he was getting into when he takes the Munster job.
Yeah, and it's probably a little bit of... they have been hit hard. It's probably the depth as well of the next level coming through. I think you could talk about Leinster and their depth, and we speak about that all the time. Leo Cullen's in a very, very good position that way with a lot of his players that are coming through. But there is some good young players coming through at Munster. Gavin Coombs came on the other night. He's a very good prospect. Jack O'Sullivan, Shane Daly at fullback. So there's a couple of guys you can name, but it's very difficult then when the whole team is under pressure and you know, it doesn't matter who you have in the back line, in my opinion, if your forwards are getting beaten.
Why are the forwards getting beaten?
Because they're not, some of them are not good enough. And that's the harsh reality of it. Some of them are underperforming. Some of them are out of form. And it just takes one or two, Ger, any team, or three, to make a couple of mistakes, just be a little bit off. And that kind of snowballs. And it makes it more difficult. And then you're playing away from home. You're playing a crowd baying for blood, a team full of confidence. So little things, because they started the game well, Munster, to be fair to them. And I just thought, you know, they just didn't impose themselves. They didn't have any ball carriers. They didn't make hard yards. They didn't win the collisions. And, you know, I think I heard some people talking about desire. And there is a desire part to it as well. But there's just a bit of pride in it as well. That, you know, look, a few things went wrong on them and a couple of mistakes.
Desire and pride are going to be all well and good. If you've no ball carriers, if you don't have the right players...
They didn't carry the ball the other night. You know, there's some of them well able to carry the ball and they were a little bit naive in the way they tried to play the game. Ulster just fanned out and just smashed them and were up for the fight a little bit more, which is very disappointing. And I've always said this. My biggest criticism of Munster, any Munster team over the years, is if you're not up for the fight when you put on that jersey, it's a problem. It's a problem for me, and it's a problem for anyone who's ever worn the jersey. And like I said, I'm not sitting here saying I was perfect in any of my performances. I often needed a kick up the backside myself. But, you know, there is a responsibility, and that message has to keep kind of going. And you talk about standards week after week. I think that fight just wasn't strong enough the other night. And look, there is a little bit of a quality issue there at times when you go down the levels.
So it wasn't missing against Leinster, though. It was just a little bit of brain power at the end.
But it's a confidence thing, Ger. So if they get a result against Leinster, you know, you get a surge of confidence there.
If they got a draw against Leinster, I think that would change
things. Can take something out of it. And look, there's small margins in that game. You look back at the video, there's a couple of things that just went against them, and it's probably down to their own application, losing the ball, turning it over, just being a bit passive. Getting isolated, discipline was poor. They're just making it difficult for themselves, and that's the stuff they look back at.
Can they fix it for a trip to Paris to play?
Look, it's very difficult because they're on a run of two wins and seven. There's one draw and they're on four losses. So confidence is a big thing, and it's the energy that it can kind of create, and you can bounce off each other. There's still a lot of character there, and there's a lot of pride in guys who want to play and want to go. Their season is on the line. Effectively, they go to Racing against a side who were fantastic in Thomond Park, and their star-studded side with a lot of top-quality internationals. So it's going to be very, very difficult. But it's probably not the most daunting place in France you can go to. But I think, you know, Racing won't underestimate Munster because they are very wounded now. That one will really sting on Friday night. You know, if you go up there and you lose by 10, 12 points and you're in the fight and you're battering away at the line and you make a couple of mistakes, you can live with that. But I just think it was mid-second half, it was over, and it was right after half time, it was Munster needed to come out and set the tempo, and the opposite happened. You know, they just retreated and played really, really poorly. They'll know that themselves, but they need to be an awful lot better, because, you know, I think it would be a real blow if they didn't get. We know before the start of the tournament it was a really hard group with Saracens and Racing, but they look back with a lot of regret on that draw in Limerick. Maybe not getting the losing bonus point in Saracens when they had the kick.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can't have any regrets this weekend. They really need to throw caution to the wind. And they need to speed up the way they play. In one sense, Stephen Larkham is trying to get a bit of width in their game. But then sometimes they retreat back into slow it down. When the pressure comes on, they retreat to box kick, slow it down, one out runners. They need to bring tempo and pace to their game against in Paris on Sunday, or else they have no chance.
Is that part of the game plan, do you think? They're retreating into a slower game plan?
Or do you have I think they want to try and play, and I think I do believe Johan van Gran and Stephen Larkham, and they are trying to change and play with it. But it's down to personnel as well sometimes, Owen. But they do retreat back into where they were under Rassi, when, in fairness, he had such an effective kind of 12 months when they made the European semi-final, Pro 14 final in the 2016-17 season. And they kind of retreat back to that. That can only get you so far. Rassi Erasmus played like that with South Africa because he has beasts on the field and monsters to come off the bench. But you got to play more rugby, and they don't have that physical imposing. Now, I know Stander will come back and make a massive difference. Klein will. Kilcoyne hasn't a lot of rugby played. He will, you know, start. But I think a lot of their other frontline players really need to step up and take a little bit of ownership this week, because, you know, if they go to Paris and make silly errors and get bullied. And when I say bullied, I mean you're losing the 50-50 collisions.
Yeah.
That's going to happen sometimes. It's rugby. You run into your opposite number. He knocks you back. The next time, you've got to make sure you react. But they're losing too many of these collisions. So they've got to bring a real anger and accuracy around their ball work. And then Conor Murray has a better chance of playing well. And Carberry, get him the ball quick. Get the ball into Carberry's hands as quick as you can, because he is someone who can make something happen. Get it to Chris Farrell. Get it to Earls Conway. These are the guys you want to have running in a 4G pitch in Paris on Sunday, and actually stretching that Racing defence a little bit and playing with high tempo.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see exactly what happens.
It's a very difficult scenario for him now, and odds are that, you know, unless they produce some sort of performance, which we haven't seen recently, they're going out of Europe.
Yeah, and we wait to see what the injury report is like as well, because obviously Conway went off injured in that game. Connacht at the moment have a massive injury crisis. One of the types of injury crises that, you know, it's so bad that it's remarkable. In rugby, you're going to have a certain number of days every year that you expect your players to be out for, but Connacht are feeling the pinch at the minute. Is there anything that can be done to add a number of players to their playing squad? Is there something that, like...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's probably, again, it's a really crucial couple of weeks for them, and they've had a really dreadful kind of run of injuries. They've just mounted up week after week, and a lot of that power and kind of influence up front has been gone. Fainga, Jared Butler, Quinn Roo, Delan was out for a while. They've just had a lot of injuries, number of props out, and they've been really, really stretched. I think you'd have to have empathy for Andy Friend. I think they had 26 fit players to choose from at the weekend between the player welfare and the injuries scenario, 22 missing. So it's always going to be really difficult for them to go to the RDS and play a side full of confidence. And and belief in themselves and quality as well. So I'm not sure if, because they have a fair number of overseas players, I think they, whether they get some short-term help, or it depends on how long certain players are out for. But it's a really tough situation. It shows the gap and the difference of where Leinster are at the moment and Connacht, which is, there was a lot of optimism a number of weeks ago, but Connacht are really being hammered now by those injuries. And they're, you know, it's a legitimate reason why they're really, really struggling at the moment.
Yeah, we've got the game against Toulouse live on Off the Ball on Saturday. Leinster against Lyon is on Sunday. We also have Villa against Manchester City on Sunday as well. So a quick word about Leinster before we go. Like, it's hard to know how good they are at the moment because they keep hammering teams 40 points up at half-time. They were sensational, but obviously it's a very weakened Connacht side. And their game at the weekend against Lyon, they know exactly that they're already through. They need to get a bonus point. They need to keep racking up the bonus point wins to make sure that they've got home advantage as long as that lasts and the number one seed. But they're pretty good at the minute, right?
Yeah, the most impressive thing for me is I think the other coaches, Johan van Gran was talking about the changes. They're affecting the other provinces more, particularly Connacht and Munster. I think Ulster have had a bit more consistency in selection. As I said, bar that second stroke, third string that they sent down to the RDS.
Which still scored 35 points or 40 points.
Yeah, they did. And I think, well, it can happen when the opposition dropped their standard a little bit and a few things went right for them and they scored tries. And look, they're decent players and young players coming through will always throw the ball around. But I think the most impressive thing for Leinster is the performance doesn't change when you have the number of changes, and that's down to good coaching, really good application, everybody knowing their job inside out. And I think their biggest strength is the collective, because, and I mean this respectfully, there's no big physical monsters in that Leinster side who would really physically dominate you or hurt you. But what they do and the way they're coached and the accuracy around their carries, their clean-outs, their lines of running is just superb. So
system and culture.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very good players. That doesn't. I'm just saying there's no big Vunipola brother, one of those guys.
Yeah, you take them out of the team, team changed.
Yeah. So it's the system that the players are just been so, have so bought into it so much. They're obviously outstanding players. You look at someone like, Will Connors slips into the team, the way he started this year. Max Deegan, a couple of weeks ago, we were saying Caelan Doris was outstanding for him in a couple of games and that he's called into the Irish squad. And I think Max Deegan made 29 tackles the other night, missing on 20 carries. Two tries.
Does he start when everybody's fit in that back row?
It's phenomenal. I don't know who starts on. That's no a good one knows. Question. That's Nobody thing. Knows who starts when they're all fit.
Right. 9:05 this morning, Alan. Thanks very much for that here on OTBM. Just a reminder, if you miss anything from the show, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel and you can watch it back because all of our best stuff goes up there. You can also subscribe to the OTBAM podcast, which is timestamped wherever you get your pods, iTunes, Spotify, offthewall.com, or the best place to get us, which is the Goal Out app, because that's where OTB Sports Radio lives, which is our sports radio station that's live 24 hours a day. We've got Deal or No Deal before 9:30 this morning. Up next, it's NFL after Wildcard Weekend with Mike Carlson. OTB
AM. Bill, there was a series of events midway through the fourth quarter when about 2 minutes came off the clock before the punt. What did you see there, and is that something that you'd like to see?
We've talked about this before. It's the same thing we've talked about before. It's no change.
You said before that there might be a loophole the NFL could close. Any further thoughts on that?
No.
Hi, Bill. I know this is a disappointing evening for you, but Pats Nation, your fans, have stuck with you through thick and thin. Social media, they still love you. Do you have any message for the fans who are so supportive of you and the team?
Yeah, we appreciate our fans. I wouldn't say it's been all that thin around here personally. Maybe you feel differently, but I haven't heard too many fans say that. So, of course we appreciate our fans. That's, we have a great relationship with them. They're here for us, and we always try to perform our best so they can be proud of the way we perform.
If you get the opportunity to dig out the Bill Belichick press conference from the post-match of the Tennessee Titans, then I suggest you do. It's a masterpiece in saying nothing but being very, very angry about stuff. Mike Carlson, good morning to you. How are you doing?
I'm moving on to the next week of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's exactly why. On to Cincinnati, except there's no more Cincinnati for Bill Belichick this week or for Tom Brady. Just very briefly, that we played that clip. The start of that clip was him being asked about 2 minutes coming off the clock. And there are memes now going around the internet of him doing this, where he took 2 minutes off the clock with a series of fouls and penalties against the Jets, and his face is like, ah, look at me, I've just told a great joke. And then he was absolutely livid that it was happening to him, that his protege was doing unto him what he had done unto the Jets. You know, what goes around comes around.
Oh, exactly. It's a copycat league, and you know, usually when Bill innovates something or comes up with a loophole in the rules he can exploit, the quote unquote competition committee immediately makes it illegal, or everybody else starts doing it, deferring it, you know, deferring the first half kickoff choice, all kinds of things over the year, jumping over the center to block a field goal. You know, it's a constant process. And I think he was more angry that that Mike Vrabel was doing it, you know, than the fact that it could be done. He had to kind of accept that. But it was a good strategy. Happy New Year, guys.
I'm yes, back in
you,
my, yeah.
my normal mode, not my Bill Belichick mode. But, you know, the reality was he won a division and went 12-4 with a team that wasn't very good. And I think we saw that in the second half of the year when teams realized that, you know, if they could score more than 14 points against the Patriots, they had a pretty good shot at winning. You know, and even so, you could look at this game against the Titans. You could look at the game against Kansas City for sure. You could even look at the Edelman fumble in Baltimore as being a game turnaround. They were in game. You know, the old Patriots would have won those games, but this year's Patriots just couldn't do that when they had the opportunity to put these games away. Remember, Tennessee's offense only scored 13 points in this game. You know, the game was there to be won.
Is this the end? Is like the Brady's press conference was very interesting as well, because he got asked exactly the same question in exactly the same format. Your fans love you. Social media says you're amazing. They stuck through you through bad times, she said. She changed her question the next time when it came to Brady. And he was like, look, I don't know what the future is. I don't know if he's negotiating here or if actually this could be the end. And maybe that's the right thing for the Patriots.
Yeah, I don't think Brady is finished if he doesn't want to be. You know, lots of people are saying that he can't make the throws. He can't do this or that. He is a different quarterback, and he's one who's obviously in decline, but he still has skills. He was still making, I mean, the throw to the sidelines to Edelman was a perfectly great throw, and Edelman turns around and then drops it. So it's an incompletion in NFL terms. It would have been a fumble in my world of reality, but that's another story. He's pretty much at the point where Peyton Manning was when Manning left Indianapolis for 2 years at Denver. And his first year at Denver, you remember, he was very effective, got to the Super Bowl, and they got killed by the Ravens. The next year, he was completely ineffective, shared time with Brock Osweiler, but they got to the Super Bowl and won it. And I think Brady's in that same position. So there's a number of variables here, the biggest one being what other teams might want him. Who might bring him in as a 1 or possibly 2 year fix, knowing he's going to be very expensive if they do. The second thing is, what are New England going to do in terms of next year's team? And this goes beyond team building, where they did not a good job this year. And some of that was beyond their control, losing David Andrews to an illness rather than injury, Gronk making a late decision to retire, which didn't really let them address it in a number of ways. But does Bill Belichick lose Josh McDaniels, for example, to another team as head coach? Does he lose Nick Caserio as the de facto general manager, who, you know, wanted to go to Houston last year but was still under contract? Brady and McDaniels obviously have a relationship, and that could affect things as well. Do they want to pay Brady, knowing how much he's probably going to cost? You know, there's the much vaunted home team discount with Tom Brady. He doesn't need the money per se. But if San Diego, say, if Philip Rivers leaves San Diego and San Diego say, well, you know, we've played the last few years with an old quarterback who can't move in the pocket, and Rivers probably has a bit more arm than Brady, but you know, maybe that would be a good move. If they offer him $30 million a year for 2 years, do the Patriots match that?
Yeah, knowing that they're a new stadium to fill in LA as well, of course. And they actually have receiving talent and a running back who he could dump the ball off to who would be amazing for him. So you could see
although a lousy offensive line, a line that's worse than the Patriots' offensive line. But they can address that in the offseason.
Yeah.
And they could say to Brady, we're addressing that. You know, there will be other teams who are possibly interested in Tom Brady. That'll be an interest. So then he sits down with Kraft and presumably with Belichick, and they say, well, what are you guys going to do? And is it worth my suffering for another 2 years here for $20 million a year or whatever you're going to offer me? Or should I go into the sun and get, you know, get $30 million or more with a team that's going to build themselves around me for a year or two? It's going to be a really fascinating discussion. But the one thing I don't think is going to happen is that he's going to retire.
It's funny that Joe Montana obviously left the San Francisco 49ers when they were still a dynasty and went off and had a great career with Kansas and led them to a championship game. But the 49ers had Steve Young, who were kind of forcing him out. The Patriots don't have a replacement on the books at the moment. So, like, it's not an obvious thing for them to usher him out, is it?
No, not obvious at all. Jarrett Stidham looked good in preseason, but when they gave him a brief trial during the season, he looked like a rookie, a fourth-round rookie, which is what he was. Remember, Brady was, Brady was even further down in the draft than that. Now, there are veteran quarterbacks around who they could bring in. What would be interesting would be if they signed Philip Rivers and Brady went to the Chargers. That to me, that scenario popped up in my mind while I was watching the game on Saturday. The other thing is that a lot of the problems the Patriots have is down to their difficulty with breaking in young players. Not just at the skill positions, but predominantly at the skill positions. And with receivers, you have to have Brady's trust in that offense. And if he doesn't trust you, he won't throw to you. And he seemed incredibly reluctant to throw the ball, to almost anyone. And in the end, wound up throwing to Edelman as much as possible. To Ben Watson, who dropped a ball toward the end of the game, like Edelman, which both were crucial drops, to Sanu, who obviously was not worth a second round draft pick. They did throw a lot to N'Keal Harry, and Jacoby Myers never even took the field, the young receivers. But like a lot of teams in these playoffs, they couldn't throw to their wide receivers. No wide receiver for Tennessee had more than one catch in that game. And nobody says, they've got a huge wide receiver problem. I'm just looking down the line, no one but Michael Thomas for the Saints had more than one catch. It's a funny kind of league where the Eagles, for example, can have their wide receiver core decimated, and still play tough offensively. And the Patriots can't with pretty much the same because they didn't have tight ends to go to.
Yeah.
So they had to just throw to running backs and Julian Edelman. You can't win like that.
So is this not a really liberating moment for the Patriots then, that they can get rid of a quarterback, set him off into the sunset, the greatest of all time. Well done. We've loved your contribution to this franchise. And Bill Belichick can then step up. Because I would see this as a very attractive proposition for any quarterback coming in to work with somebody like Bill Belichick. I think it's far more attractive than a coach at the moment wanting to work with Tom Brady or trying to provide an offense around Tom Brady for the reasons you've just listed.
Yeah, if I were Bill, if I were Bill Belichick and insecure about my future, about the way the future is going to see me, I would sign Marcus Mariota and win a Super Bowl with Marcus Mariota at quarterback. But I don't think that's how he's motivated. I think there'll be a lot of pressure within the organization to keep Brady with the Patriots for his whole career. The Krafts will think that this will be the real test of Bill Belichick's ruthlessness, shall we say, in terms of getting rid of players before their value, before their decline begins rather than after. Brady has been the exception in that, and now you're talking about the exception who's going to require big money to be kept. So it's a double exception for Belichick. And this will be, I think, a real definer for his career, even though, he's nearing the end of his career.
Yeah.
And I mentioned McDaniels, McDaniels is theoretically, or at least, you know, by rumor, has been promised the head coaching job when Bill retires. But Bill coaches till he's 87. It's, you know, it's kind of like the Queen and Prince Charles.
Yeah.
Know? It's like he could be waiting the rest of his life to become a head coach.
We've got about a minute left here, Mike. What else from the weekend should we be talking about? Is it DK Metcalf? Is it the Vikings finally winning a big game in a tight spot? What is your big takeaway?
Yeah, well, I think the Saints lose another game in a tight spot. I think that's one takeaway. Drew Brees' fumble, if it were Brady, everybody would be saying he was finished. And I think it was kind of a fluke because I think he got hit directly under the arm.
Yeah.
And his arm went numb, and that's why the ball came out. But for me, I think Minnesota's probably your best story. I don't see much future for any of these teams going through to the next round. I think you'd have to be optimistic, and the Vikings with maybe are the best team probably of the bunch, but they're going to be on a short week playing on the road again in San Francisco. That's going to be a real tough task for them. And I think you just saw DK Metcalf. You mentioned Seattle put a rookie in, and they basically bring him along. And yes, N'Keal Harry for the Patriots missed the first half of the season with injury. But you just saw how Metcalf developed during, you know, the weak points of his college game became strong points for the Seahawks. And Russell Wilson needs a big play receiver. They won that game based on two big plays to N'Keal, to DK Metcalf. The Patriots had no big play receiver. They lost to the Titans as a result. And one good word for Derrick Henry, you know, to go into New England and win completing eight passes, you know, is in large part down to Derrick Henry just simply being unstoppable in terms of controlling the game. And I really like watching old school football, and that was old school football.
Mike, great stuff. Great to have you with us. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks a million.
Always good. Thanks, guys.
It's Mike Carlson with us. Time for a bit of Deal or No Deal.
I signed for them after the Euros. After my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking,
regretting it.
What have I done? Like, I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Right. I like that sexy new sting. Happy New Year, Phil.
Happy New Year, lads. Welcome back.
Deal or No Deal, Phil. Deal. Manchester United's England midfielder Jesse Lingard could be on the way out of Old Trafford, but he's got the moves. He's got the moves, he's got the clothes, and he's got the, is it Shore? Is it Head and Shoulders? Whatever campaign he's gone. The Sunday Mirror reported the club wants to pawn him off as part of a mega deal comprised of the attacker and $45 million in exchange for Leicester City's, Irish qualified maybe, we're not sure, James Maddison. It has since emerged via the Mail that the 27-year-old Lingard is now a Mino Raiola footballer, with the involvement of the super agent increasing speculation that Jesse is on the move. Does Lingard plus $45 million over or undervalue Maddison, and is there any chance this deal will happen?
No. Lingard is going to leave, though.
No.
Because if when Raiola takes you on...
Out of context, Phil Egan.
Yeah.
No.
The reason he is taking you on is because he's going to get you a move. Because Mino needs to, if he wants to make money, you got to move.
Yeah.
But if you're Leicester, it makes no sense.
He's going to Wolves, isn't he? Oh, no, that's Mendes, is it? Or is that Raiola? Who's the...
Mendes is Wolves.
Mendes is, yeah.
Right, okay. Will Manchester United fans be glad to see the back of Jesse Lingard?
Yes. What? Young Jesse Lingard.
How much is James Maddison worth?
In the current climate, he's probably worth over $50 million. So if you're Leicester and he is going to go at some stage, then you say to any buyers,
cash only.
Cash only.
None of your pawn off.
Yeah, they don't want
Man United
Jesse
wage.
Lingard. They've got good midfielders already.
Jesse Lingard is going to end up becoming Everton. A decent Everton player.
Oh, I don't know, because I have a feeling we'll be talking about Everton in a few minutes, and there's another option on the table.
But, I mean, at some stage in his career.
Well, it's now or never for the purposes of this segment.
Like he's not actually young, he's 27.
Good point, in fairness. Good, like, you can't really argue with that. He's 27.
Yeah.
So he's going to sign for like the next team that comes up from the Championship.
Yeah, well, Sheffield United seem to be taking on these players that can... Now, I'm not putting him in the same category as Morrison or Rodwell, because, you know, he hasn't... like, Morrison obviously went off the rails. Rodwell's been injured. But...
Let's just focus on the fact that Jesse Lingard is 27 for a moment here. Like, we often,
he's older than you.
Like, I was just about to say, like, we all try to avoid sounding like your dad because 19-year-olds are doing 19-year-old things. I genuinely was forgiving of Jesse Lingard because that's what 19-year-olds do. He's older than me.
Yeah.
The guy needs to grow up. Like, I mean, fair play on the clothing line and all that, but the embarrassing Marbella video with Marcus Rashford, when even Marcus Rashford looked kind of embarrassed to be in his company at that point.
Yeah, he's got 27. He had one purple patch under Mourinho where people were calling him Messi Lingard. In December 2018, was it?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
When he had an unbelievable month, and that's as good as it got.
Post-World Cup. Deal or no deal wildcards and Serie A leaders Inter Milan may win the hunt to secure Paul Pogba's signature. We've got a Paul Pogba bumper update here. Mirror Sport report that Antonio Conte has been told that the Red Devils want striker Lautaro Martinez as part of a deal for Pogba. I may have butchered the Christian name there. 22-year-old Argentine forward is also believed to be a Barca target and valued at some 80 million quid.
Yeah, this guy is one of the hottest properties right now. But
Lautaro,
I can't see how he's going to United.
Let me, I'm not finished. I said bumper, Phil. Pogba's links with Real Madrid are live again. The gossip columns say Manchester United want 30-year-old Toni Kroos as part of a potential deal with the Spanish giants. I'm a big fan of Toni Kroos. They should get him. Meanwhile, Juve will reportedly offer midfielder Rabiot, 24, in a player plus cash deal for Pogba. Ole insists the French star will not leave in this window, either with his people or without them. Do any of these links sound legitimate? And who makes the biggest impact on Man United? Martinez, Kroos, or Rabiot?
Martinez obviously is the youngest and is more one for the future. Toni Kroos goes in and makes midfield better straight away.
Yeah.
He's 30, but Matic is 31. You get two or three good years out of Kroos.
You get 4 years out of Toni Kroos.
He's an unbelievable player. If you've got good players around them. I know Matic is quite slow. Kroos isn't as immobile as Matic. Plus, if you've got young players around them, they're going to learn from one of the best midfielders in world football.
Rabiot, any good?
I don't think there's been a gossip column written since 2003 that doesn't have the name Adrien Rabiot written at this point. You have to say he struggled at two consecutive clubs.
Yeah.
He's,
if he goes to United, it will be not very good because there's obviously an issue with his attitude. And unfortunately, United have had too many players.
They've got plenty of that already.
Yeah, so they don't need a player like Adrien Rabiot. And I remember when I saw him playing for PSG in the flesh before and I thought, this lad is—he's decent, but he's one of those players. He's going to look better in a better team because he'll rarely give the ball away.
Where do you want to see Pogba play?
Anywhere but Manchester United, because I'm just sick of talking about him.
But like, honestly, where would you?
Let's let the Toni Kroos trade happen.
Yeah.
And get him into Real Madrid.
He's the archetypal Real Madrid player. He will be a superstar for Real Madrid. He'll win two Champions Leagues. They'll not win a league while he's there, and it'll be brilliant.
It'll be beautiful.
Oh well, let's go and see it.
It will be bucket list drama.
Yes.
Gareth Bale on the golf club, Pogba at his mate's wedding.
Pogba dancing.
Week in, week out.
It would be sensational.
Bring back the kind of needless Galactico era.
Yes.
Zizou. Yeah. All he needed was Zizou. That's what he'll say.
Stop this signing 19 and 20 year old brilliant Brazilians. Start signing over the hill, but like ready to do one last Magnificent Seven tour. Like Paul Pogba, it's perfect.
Install Wenger / Mourinho as manager.
One last Manchester United note. Their links with Sporting Lisbon's Bruno Fernandes, which dominated the summer, have returned to the headlines. This is one which we will be monitoring, and we're not asking for a deal or no deal on that just yet.
Because he doesn't exist, probably.
If you want to give me a bonus one, go for it.
No, I saw him playing for Sporting.
Yeah, he has a Wikipedia page.
When I watched him playing for Sporting this season, there was very much a feel of a player that didn't really want to be there. Turned it on at moments. You could see the potential, like the quality there. So he'll definitely want to get out of Sporting.
We're into rapid fire now. Two more quick internotes. Determined and continue to be linked with a move for Eriksen, potentially paying 20 million now to bag him before his contract runs out. Chelsea made Inter Milan's Brazil striker Gabriel Barbosa their top January target, according to The Express. Irish international Troy Parrott didn't clock up any minutes in the FA Cup, but has made the gossip columns. Whoa. Sorry, my phone smashed and it's a new one. I don't know how to turn it off.
Humble brag.
There you go.
It's a Jim White moment. He's
the Everton
deals.
Yeah. It's like, Pogba to Madrid.
I mean, no.
Done deal. The Evening Standard reports that Troy Parrott is set to sign a major new deal at Spurs with a year and a half left in his current contract. Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund have been linked with the 17-year-old. Do we want to see him sign a Spurs deal and see him loaned out following Jose's comments about him not being ready for the first team? Or do we want to see him go to Bayern Munich?
We want to see him loaned out from Tottenham Hotspur. I was wrong about Jose. This is not going to work out, is it? And it's going to happen.
But it turns out it wasn't Pochettino.
No.
It was the lack of investment in the squad.
Reports from France suggest that Arsenal formally contacted Bayern Munich to register their interest in the 31-year-old German Jerome Boateng. Owen, would he fit into Arteta's new look Wolfpack defence?
He would. They're kind of putting the freeze on signing defenders at the moment, though, because they've got Saliba coming back from San Etienne next year. Also in from Upamecano.
Liverpool fans are excited at the prospect of signing Ousmane Dembele after the Barcelona star liked a mocked-up picture of him wearing a Reds kit on Instagram. The Frenchman's future at the Nou Camp is up in the air. Phil, does this mean... What?
Did you see this?
Yeah. Does this mean Dembele will be a Red, and where would he fit into the Klopp formula?
There he is. He's after scoring from another assist from Trent Alexander-Arnold. He'd be perfect for Liverpool in terms of the style of play. I wonder what Klopp would make him as a human. That's one thing that
seems to be important.
But do you know what? You look at a couple of players Barca have signed. They've paid over 100 million for Coutinho and Dembele.
Didn't work.
It hasn't worked out for them. Now, Dembele has had injuries, but I think Barcelona fans actually really like him. They see the potential there.
He's very young still.
He's so quick. He'd be exactly... You could see him fitting into the Liverpool team.
Olivier Giroud, 33, allowed to leave Chelsea, being linked with a move to solve Aston Villa's injury crisis. Can he save the Villa?
Yes, he can.
No, he can't.
Olivier Giroud can save anything.
They're gonna sign him and they will regret it forever, like most of the signings they've ever made.
Wesley and Giroud.
Diego Simeone has not ruled out Atletico interest in 24-year-old French midfielder Thomas Lemar, who's been linked with Tottenham and Arsenal. Does the prospect of him arriving... I mean, come on.
Like, it's not 2015 anymore, but yeah, come on, big name, let's go for it.
James is an Everton target. A loan deal could bring the Colombian to Liverpool. Yes or no?
They need him. Watch
deal
him
or no
yesterday.
Deal.
Yeah, get it done.
He's 28. He's only 28. He's the same age as Jesse Lingard, basically.
You're older.
He might be just a bit better than Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Hit it.
I signed for them after the Euros. And after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking...
Regretting it.
What have I done? Like I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much us for today. Unless there's any final thoughts you want to give us? You want to start doing some moral final thoughts like Jerry Springer at the end of the show?
Not really. I just want to wish everybody a happy new year. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy and prosperous Christmas period.
Wow. 25 going on 40. 9:29 this morning. That's it from us here on OTBAM. Thank you very much for joining us. We're back on your radios tonight from 7 o'clock on Newstalk. You can subscribe to the OTBAM podcast, fully timestamped, making it very easy to find exactly what you want from this morning's two-hour show. If you missed anything, the sports pages talking Mickey Hart on Colin McShane, Irish football with Keith Andrews, rugby with Alan Quinlan, Deal or No Deal, and the end of the Patriots dynasty. We have to say dynasty with Mike Carlson. You'll find it on podcasts, also on YouTube. You can cast us onto your smart TV. Remember, OTBAM, Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show, back tomorrow morning from 7:30. We'll see you then. Good luck.
OTBAM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.